workshop for Volusia County Schools. Today is Tuesday, February 8th. It is 12:30 p.m. And we will go ahead and call this meeting to order and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. And once again, thank you for joining us in our school board workshop this morning, or this afternoon. Wow, it's afternoon. I'd like to introduce the folks on the dais who are here with me. First of all the way to the far right, we have Ms. Erin Lieben, who is our agency clerk. Next to Ms. Lieben, we have Mrs. Anita Burnett, which is the representative for District 2. Next to Ms. Burnett, we have Vice Chair Jamie Haynes, representative for District 1. Next to Vice Chair Jamie Haynes, we have Dr. Scott Fritz, superintendent. To my left, we have Mr. Doran, who is our board attorney. And attending virtually due to some medical issues is Mr. Persis and Ms. District 4 representative and Linda Cuthbert. Do you all want to say hello?
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Beautiful. We were able to hear you both loud and clear. That it was asked that you please speak into your microphones just because they can only turn it up so much here in the auditorium. As for a matter of housekeeping, what we'll do is whenever a question is raised, I do have the Teams meeting up, so I may be able to see your hand come up, but we will go to Mr. Persis and Ms. Cuthbert for their input should they have any. So first item on the agenda is 2.01, Strategic Plan Mid-Year Stock Tape, presented by Dr. Fritz.
Thank you, Chairman. Board members, public, as you know, part of the power of the strategic plan is to be able to gauge where we are at as we go through the process of the year with doing this work. And with our strategic plan, we have those built-in stock takes where every goal lead has an opportunity twice a semester to sit down and analyze where we are at with their teams and with myself. I'm happy to report that this gives us great opportunities to discover solutions to problems in real time. And so we also made a commitment that we would share twice a year with this board the progress that we're making on that strategic plan, this being the mid-year reporting. And so today's format will be this. We will start with the goal leads, and they will come forward, and they will work through goals 1 through 5. Because teaching and learning is such at the forefront of everything we do, we are going to allot a little extra time for goal number 1 in our student achievement, which will be 25 minutes. And then afterwards, after each goal is presented, so that we can get through everything, we've allotted 5 to 7 minutes for board member comments, and then if we have more or questions. And if we have more time after we finish goal 5, then we can certainly go back. But understand that we will answer every question you have. It just may take a little bit of time. And we do have one other item besides the strategic mid-year update. At this time, I'd like to call Dr. Balgobin and Rachel Hazel forward to kind of get us started in the process, and then we'll bring forward goal 1.
Good afternoon, Superintendent Fritz, Chairman Colon, board members. Good afternoon to each and every one of you. I'm here joined by Ms. Rachel Hazel. Say hello, Ms. Rachel.
Good morning, board members and Superintendent Fritz.
We're very excited. I'll tell you that the goal leads, along with the strategy leads, they have worked diligently to compile the data for you today. And as our superintendent stated, when we created our strategic plan, it was very important that this document becomes a living, breathing document for every single one of us so that we can look at those strategies, so that we can look at our activities, right, and our implementation plan and be able to make timely decisions and adjustments in a timely manner. So thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. We have our goal leads. I will call on our goal lead for goal 1. So please come on up, Dr. Renee Clayton, Dr. Barrio, and Ms. Core. They will be joining us.
Thank you, and I'll remind everyone to please speak into the microphone so that Carl and Linda can hear you. They are dependent on the audio.
Were they okay?
Yeah,
they couldn't
good.
Hear me before?
No, they could hear you.
Okay.
Just make sure, because normally we speak to each other in the room, and so having them remote, it's important that they're able to hear us.
Okay, before we dive into goal one, I just want to give a few introductory slides and let you know this is the mid-year, and what's so wonderful about this is you have every department and every section of our school system in the room, and so we can see how all of these tie together. Of course, everything does tie and ultimately lead to goal one, so that's why they're here first. This is just a quick reminder of what all of our goals are in the strategic plan for each section. And then we have our timeline. In between the reporting to you all, each goal has come before Superintendent Fritz at least twice, some more, depending on where they are in the cycle, to update their progress and give some information about where they are with their metrics. And then Dr. Fritz did a good job of going over the agenda for today and our timing, and so we'll have the timers. We'll spend about 25 minutes on this first goal. And with that, I'll turn it over to our assistant superintendents.
All right, thank you. Okay, we will get started with the overview, first of all, of goal one. As you know, this is our high-quality instruction goal with the focus on engaging all students at high levels of learning every day. And so we have this broken down into five strategies, which is 1A, the focus is on ELA, 1B, focus on mathematics, 1C is a focus on science, 1D is on the focus on intervention and remediation to close the achievement gaps, and 1E is a focus on enrichment and acceleration to ensure that all students are college, career, and life ready. These are the initial metrics that we set forth on the three-year strategic plan. So over the 3 years, our goal is to ensure that we are ensuring every student receives high-quality, equitable, standards-based curriculum and instruction that's consistent throughout the district. And our school grade goal for the 3 years is to become an A district. And you can see our graduation rate goal over the 3 years and our college and career ready and acceleration goal over the 3 years. So this slide is to bring forward some really high-level highlights that we would like to emphasize. You're going to hear about them embedded throughout the strategies, but you can see very quickly that we are very, very proud. We've spoken many times about that graduation rate right now at 91.9%. Our VPK programs exceeding the state readiness rate and the pass rate at 82% for industry certifications, and the geometry end of course exam percent passing is the highest of all Central Florida Coalition, and the least restrictive environment has increased to 76.5% for students with disabilities, and 65% of our ELLs with 6 or more years in the program have been reclassified out. Those were some of the really high top highlight data points that we wanted to bring forward now, but you will hear us talk a little bit more about them with each strategy. So this slide is to talk to you a little bit about our first semester only, as this is our mid-year update. This is our first semester data that we have collected from visiting schools, every single one of our schools in semester one. You can see that over K-12, we visited 1,976 K-12 classrooms to do the formalized learning walk process that's consistent across the district with those look-fors for standards-aligned instruction across K through 12. And after those formalized learning walks, we had follow-up visits in the first semester that were also collected through a data collection tool to measure and keep track of what kinds of supports we are providing to the schools. And you can see across K-12, we returned to those classrooms 4,143 instances to provide either side-by-side coaching, PLC support, professional learning, whatever the schools needed based on their action plans that they helped write, asking and inviting us back to their schools and their classrooms to help support deeper implementation of that standards-aligned instruction. The graph there you can see is a graph of those visits by tiered schools. And by design, it is our plan, as we set forth, we said that we would visit our tier three schools on a weekly basis and provide them support. So our resource teachers and supports from the district level, when they returned for those 4,143 visits, you can see the majority of those were in the Tier 3 schools, or indicated by the blue portion of that circle graph. And then Tier 2 schools are the purple, and then all the way down to our Tier 1 schools, which need our least amount of support, but they still need support. And we did hear from them, and we were able to adjust along the way. They said, hey, we need a little more help too. So we were able to provide them some supports as well. So I'll jump right into our ELA strategy. And as you see at the top, I will remind you that our key activities for each strategy are consistent across all five of the strategies. We have a focus on curriculum, a focus on instructional practices, and a focus on assessment. So you'll see that is consistent throughout all of these strategies. So for an overview of some high points that I'd like to share with you for K-12 in ELA, curriculum and assessment, as you know, this has been a big year of the new K-12 best standards implementation. So that has included professional learning and resources. So the curriculum maps were rewritten in alignment with the best standards and with the new ELA textbook adoption. The those new textbooks were adopted and have been fully implemented. And then the new assessments have been aligned as well within our school city, and they are reported through our Power BI dashboard, so the schools have instant access to those results. Specifically for elementary, some highlights are around our VPK readiness rate exceeds the state average, which is a requirement of 62% of the students or higher being ready out of the VPK programs, and 100% of those VPK programs meet that requirement. We expanded into 5 additional schools this year, and we're looking to expand for another 5 for next school year. And part of that pipeline is to help encourage kindergarten students to stay in our district. And as you can see on day 20, we had 438 more students this current school year enrolled as compared to last school year. We also have continued with our core connections writing training. And so we stayed with the same 23 schools as last year, but this year we expanded. Most of them only had 3 through 5 implementation, and so we expanded to now we have 16 of our elementary schools that have been participating in the implementation of the core connections training for K through 5. Our third grade ELA proficiency, as of the midpoint of the year, we have 2,832 of our 4,200 students on track to complete their third grade portfolio. Regardless of what their FSA score is, we're already on track to complete that portfolio. Our goal is to make sure that every student has the opportunity to complete a portfolio, which we started from day one this school year, rather than waiting until January to start that process. And then 47%, actually we have on our iReady Diagnostic 2, we had an increase to 47% proficient from 31% compared to Diagnostic 1. And you can see those individual increases from beginning of the year to mid-year for percentage of students considered proficient in each grade level. And I'm going to pass it all along to my middle school colleague here, Patty Kaur.
Thank you, Dr. Clayton. And, of course, in the middle division, we also rolled out new curriculum with the best standards and new resources for Teacher Edition. We include teachers whenever possible in the ELA planning and the curriculum mapping, because we know that they're the ones who are doing that work on the ground, and it's important to get their feedback and input. For our level 2 students who had scored on a FSA level 2 in the prior year, we used the Achieve 3000 program. And as of the mid-year in December, 22% of those students were already trending at a level three, meaning they would be out of the level two and into a proficiency, would also gain us a learning gain for that. So we were proud to see that, and we still have, you know, from this point, another 4 months before they take the actual test. In addition, we're using, with our new resources, we still have HMH as our textbook in middle school for ELA, and 60% of the students are performing at or above grade level if you compare the HMH growth measure number one to the HMH growth measure number two, and then it's broken down by grade. 71% are higher in sixth grade, 60% at or above grade level in seventh, and 64% at or above grade level in eighth grade, and you see the comparison data there. So we saw an increase in sixth grade. It was the highest increase, and that they increased 13% in the comparison between those two growth measures. Seventh graders increased 10%, and eighth grade increased 3% on their performance. And at this time, Dr. Berrio, high school.
Thank you, Ms. Hort. Okay, and for high school, we had 85 teachers attend the cross-district ELA planning for 9th and 10th grade, and we saw a lot of immediate returns that are exciting. So we saw over 50% of our students who took the ELA portion of the ACT and CR earned a concordance score. So that's 608 students just from the ACT and CR. We saw a 6% increase in passing FSA retakes for 12th graders. And we saw 491 mean score for just from the SAT school day, based reading and writing. So that was a lot of factors that go into that 491 mean score. We had 17 points above the state mean. We had 3 points above the national and international mean. And also, 480 is what we need, what students need for concordance score currently for the SAT, and our mean score was 491. So not only are the students graduating because of the SAT school day, but they're also more likely to qualify for more colleges and universities based on that SAT mean score. Thank you.
Okay, and we'll move right along into our mathematics strategy. And so we do have some high-level data points we'd like to share that are overarching for K through 12. So this is consistent for elementary, middle, and high. All of the coaches have been trained, school-based coaches have been trained for the new best standards for mathematics overview for implementation next school year. So the win here is that we've already been building their capacity so that they can fully feel confident to implement next school year. The administrators also, every single month at our administrator meetings, they are receiving that same overview, and they're learning about the assessment and best standards implementation each month so that we build a little bit each month so that they're ready to go for next school year. 64 teachers across all of the grade levels have participated in the curriculum map review and revisions for this current school year of implementation, and all K-12 coaches have previewed the content. So each monthly meeting, not only the coaches but also the administrators, Dr. Deary and her team, they preview the upcoming content so that the coaches are ready to go back to their schools and support their teachers for the upcoming content for full implementation with planning and delivery of that instruction. And then the professional learning is focused on strategies and the digital resources with content training at all levels. And many of those, they have sessions. You'll see in elementary, I'll get to that in just a second. So the Bridge to the Best is embedded in all curriculum maps. So what I want to share about that is it's a section on the curriculum map that's called Bridge to the Best, so that if it's something that they don't get in this current school year before implementation, that would turn up as possible learning gap in the future when this new implementation comes into play. So they've been proactive to make sure that teachers and students are exposed to those skills in advance where necessary. And then the topic content trainings for all topics. So each math curriculum map is broken into several topics, and each topic has a professional learning support live streamed Teams meeting, and those have also been recorded so the teachers can log in and participate in that to help them plan for that upcoming content. the Reflex Math program. That's a computer-based program for math fluency, and it's in grades 2 through 5, and you may have seen or heard multiple different challenges and excitement around the math fluency program. As you can see, 20.4 million facts have been solved with 52.8 facts average gain as of mid-year and 768,000 facts for fluency gain with the total number of active students at 14,000 at the midpoint. This is one program that we've really seen a lot of excitement come to life across every school in our district. New progress monitoring assessments were developed for quarter 1 and 3, so those are a bit, little bit bigger assessments so that it's a progress monitoring point to see what the students have retained from beginning of the year to that midpoint so that the teachers know what to circle back on for ongoing remediation. And you can see the scores there for the students by grade level for each of that each of the grade levels for progress monitoring 1. Progress monitoring 2 will happen at the end of quarter 3. And then those ongoing topic checks, so those are the end of the topic, quick formative assessments for all grade levels, have a high reliability. And then you can also see the difference between Diagnostic 1 and 2 with iReady Math for the growth over the year. I'm going to pass it along to my middle school partner.
Thank you again. All right. In middle school, you see some data here from the work that we've been doing. One of the predictors we have for middle school is our standards mastery test. You see SMT1, and that's given at the beginning of the year and is like a pretest, so it measures what students already know before they've learned the content, and we compare that to the SMT2. 25, almost 26% increase in sixth grade in our regular class, 29% in the accelerated. And then, of course, in sixth grade, we have 3 math classes, and the third one is the sixth grade honors. We had a 35 percentage points increase on the SMT2. Seventh grade regular, 14 percentage point increase, and in the seventh accelerated, almost 23% increase from SMT1 to SMT2. Pre-algebra, as you know, that generally is our students who have not accelerated in math by eighth grade, so they're not sitting in algebra or geometry. 18.8% increase from in pre-algebra from 1 to 2. And then in algebra, we're tracking those students as well because they also earn a high school credit and an acceleration rate. 29 percentage point increase in algebra. And we embedded, again, we talked about this already, we're starting to work on the best standards in math to get the teachers ready for that, and building in the support in the curriculum guides. And there's a new streamlined Canvas course in middle grades that the teachers can use, and there's a ton of resources in there to help them, and it's based by standard. So if there's students struggling with a particular standard, they can go into the course and pull the resources for that standard. And one of the greatest things, too, we have in middle school this year for our math teachers is the new planning guides that go along with the calendar pacing. So that really helps our newer teachers keep on track with the pacing for those math courses and resources that go along with it to help them plan for their courses. Dr. Berrio?
Thank you. And for high school in geometry, we had the highest percentage of students passing geometry from all the Central Florida Coalition school districts at 52%, which again goes back to graduation readiness for students. We had 16.2% increase in Algebra 1 from SMT1 to SMT2. We had a 19.5% increase in geometry, which ties back into the first bullet for this current year for between SMT1 and SMT2. We had a 3% increase from prior year of fall EOC in Algebra 1 retake pass rate. It increased to 19%. And again, between Algebra 1 and geometry, that's getting the students ready to graduate. And then a lot of that is attributed to what we've done with our math department, Dr. Deary and her team, with Algebra 1 development and implementation of a daily curriculum pacing guide for the 2021-22 school year.
Okay, and as we know, our ELA and math strategies are a very big, heavy lift for us. So as we move into the next 3 strategies, I'm going to go a little bit quicker in the interest of time. So this next one, 1C, is science. And so we have several highlights for science, K-12. Dr. Fritz's One Lab a Week Challenge has come to life. We see more hands-on labs. The same process has been put into place for our curriculum maps and assessments and participation by teachers and professional learning. As you know, you've heard so much about the wonderful Museum of Arts and Sciences for our 8th grade is complete and 5th grade is in progress right now. We had the robot brawl, 7 high schools and 2 middle schools with 36 teams, and the first Lego League robotics program was this past weekend with 35 elementary, 24 middle, and 7 high, and then, of course, more than 600 students participating in the science fair and 98 qualifying for the Tomoka Regional Fair, and we've got 26 going to state and 1 going to an international science fair. So those are huge highlights. And for elementary, this is one of our biggest celebrations for elementary right now, is that currently on SMT2 compared to last year, we have a 4% increase, which is putting us on track to have 40% of our students proficient on the science FSSA as compared to 36% last year. And then we have an increase from SMT 1 to 2 this year. We've developed new topic planners that have been a huge hit, which we do believe the topic planners, the 4 common experiments, and the science replay, interactive science notebooks for 5th grade have all contributed to the increase in those, that 4% increase in proficiency for science overall. So I'll pass it to my middle school friends.
Yeah, science is one of the areas that Volusia County has consistently been above the mark and stands out for our work there, so we're really excited about that. In addition, in 8th grade, remember that they take the science test, and it is a fair games test, meaning there are standards from 6th and 7th grade that are included in that 8th grade test. Again, the standards mastery test we give at the beginning of the year, we compare that to SMT2, and we had a 6% increase across our middle schools in the 8th grade. We're really excited about the opportunity our students had to attend the trip to the Museum of Arts and Sciences, where they really got to do some experiential learning there. We have 175 students across our middle schools participating in Science Olympiad, and please remember that's an after-school and weekend activity, so those are a club, but they do compete, and when they compete against high school teams. We also incorporated our teachers from 6th through 8th grade in our Canvas companions that we utilize to help our teachers plan for remediation and standard-based resources to support their instruction. On this Canvas course, there were over 194,000 views as of the end of January. So we know the course is successful and it's being utilized, and it is a one-stop shop. The thing we're doing this year that we're continuing from last year is spring training for our 8th grade teachers, where they get a day to look at the data, dig into each of the students, and compare to the standards and make a plan for students to get them ready for the FSSA, and our district team helps with that. They go out and work with the PLC and get that together, and then Dr. Clayton mentioned about the science fair. That was exciting. 26 students are going to the state fair, and half of them are middle school. So we have 13 from middle and 13 from high, so I'm really pleased. And every middle school participated this year in the Tomoka Regional Science Fair. Dr. Berrio?
And for high school, as we progress monitor our students, we had 29.4% increase from biology SMT1 to SMT2. Showing progress, and then to go with that, 100% of our schools will participate in the biology spring training to develop biology ELC remediation. So it's not just the instruction that's happening every day by our teachers, but it's the remediation plans that they work with and that we come up with to assist with that. We had 49% points. We were 49% points above the state biology ELC retakes pass rate this year. 35 students participated in Envirothon Regionals, 150 students participated on a Science Olympiad team, and we had 66,320 views as of January 30th on the new Biology Canvas course for teachers. So we see the resources and the materials and the planning being used effectively based on the results that we're getting.
Okay, and for 1D, strategy 1D is our focus on closing the achievement gap through intervention and remediation. And so overall, this encompasses several of our other systems that we have in place. And so for K-12, one of the things that we've set forth in our strategic plan was that we wanted to give the schools the ability to have instant access and analysis of the assessment information using the data dashboard so that they can drill into the specific students' needs very easily, and that's happening through the Power BI system that we have. A focus on ESE, this is a highlight that we already shared, that we've increased our least restrictive environment to 76.35 for students with disabilities, and ESE department has delivered a separate learning walk specific for ESE to provide follow-up action planning for support specific to ESE. And we shared that ELL data point already. The 65% of ELLs with six or more years have been reclassified out, with 43 schools participating also in a K-12 ESOL after-school tutoring program. Intervention with implementation of quarterly intervention meetings for specific intervention teachers has been taking place, with focusing in on decision rules and getting some consistency. And as you heard before about our MTSS implementation at the last board meeting, you can see there that we have additional supports happening and systems being put into place for an MTSS process. So for elementary, there are several data points here. For elementary, as you know, we have a transformation team with 12 focus schools that were identified during our first semester, and 543 school visits have taken place. And then our ESSER funds, as you know, we're implementing the extra minutes tutoring and collaborative planning sessions that are being capitalized on. We have many school visits in addition from the ESE elementary program specialists to increase student proficiency and positive behavior outcomes. And this year, every 3 years, each level has to participate in the ESE BPI self-assessment process, which is the best practices for inclusive education, and that's happening right now with all of our elementary schools.
Thank you. In our middle schools, we did add in our intervention and remediation time called When, What I Need, after in the afternoon after lunchtime, to specifically target some of the core standards that students needed. I already mentioned about the Canvas resources for science, but we also created and modeled a seventh grade civics Canvas course with the same idea based on the standard, with remediation resources for teachers to use with their students to get them ready for the civics and, of course, exam. We talked about the spring training. One of the things we're doing across all middle schools is that we do have a plan for extra minutes for students, and some schools are utilizing before school, during lunch, after school. Some are utilizing Saturday school. Some of our schools are also working with their elective teachers and pulling small groups maybe out of a PE class a couple days a week, and that's very targeted work based on the lowest quartile students and what they need to get them ready for the May testing. And again, all of our Tier 2 students are taking the reading with the Achieve 3000 program. And we're really, of course, excited about what we're doing with middle school reform and working on that transition to teaming. All of that work is happening now to be ready to roll it out for the beginning of the 22-23 school year.
Thank you. And for high school, we had 407 seniors who had not passed FSA ELA previously earn a concordance score just through SAT school day. To go with that, we had 149 seniors that needed Algebra 1 that received their concordance score from SAT school day, and we had 59 seniors back in October who needed both and were able to earn both from the SAT school day. So, again, that goes back to our graduation readiness for our students. To go along with that, as far as supports, we had achieved 3,000 usage for our 9th and 10th graders. The average activities each week was 1.6. We had almost one-third of our students who otherwise would have been at a level 1 or 2 that are on track to receive a level 3 on the FSA. in part due to Achieve 3000. We had Canvas remediation resources created for 11th grade U.S. history. As a support and remediation, we had biology spring training, which I mentioned earlier, for teachers to develop a remediation plan. And we have also the usage of Khan Academy, which goes back to the first bullet with the SAT school days. We also have the SAT school day coming up on April 13th, which will also include any remaining seniors who still need a concordance score, and thus Khan Academy usage.
Okay, and that brings us to 1E, which is such an exciting strategy because it's enrichment and acceleration opportunities for all students, not just high-achieving students. So for elementary specifically, we have implemented the Gifted Universal Screener, and you can look over the stats there for the Universal Screener in the interest of time. We do have a 10.5% increase, a 10.5% of our students screened potentially qualify for further testing compared to 6.9% last year and 6.7% the year before. And as I said, enrichment is offered to all of our students in elementary. We've included that in the master scheduling process. And another way we are trying to reach all students for enrichment opportunities is 19 of our schools have taken on AVID this school year, and we also are planning forward for next school year for that magnet dual language program at two of our schools, one at Spirit and one at Holly Hill.
Thank you. And so for our acceleration in Goal 1E in middle school, we currently have 1,769 students enrolled as of January 31st in the algebra course and 775 enrolled in geometry, which are, of course, high school credits. We're really excited that we were able to offer 8th grade students the PSAT or the pre-SAT test this past January. 78% of our students were able to take that. That'll be utilized by the high schools to assist with course placement and acceleration opportunities as our students enter high school. Again, we also review our master schedules throughout the spring as they're being created to make sure that students are being offered acceleration opportunities and are there places in the master schedule where we could even offer additional courses like Spanish for high school credit. In some cases, our schools don't have it, and we were looking to bring that back. And then we were thankful to have AVID back in middle school, and we started in sixth grade this year. And knowing that in AVID, we accelerate our students, and the goal there is to make sure that all students take algebra before they leave middle school, again, to set them up for success and for those higher-level courses in high school.
Thank you. And going back to the pre-K-12 goal of graduation rate, we were at 91.9% last year, which is a 4.2 increase from the previous year, the highest that we've ever been, above the state average. I can go on and on, but I'll move on. Embry-Riddle Partnership School Planning and Development. This is an exciting opportunity. We've already been in meetings and planning phases with Embry-Riddle, and this is an exciting opportunity that we have for our students across Volusia County Schools to really get a STEM program in addition to what we already have across all of our schools that will. Get students into careers and opportunities that exist here in Volusia and across the nation. We had 90 students, and I believe Mrs. Wiles is going to speak about this, ages 18 to 22 that deferred their diploma are participating in community-based vocational education as we speak. And then we will come back and talk about the ATC and Daytona State College dual enrollment programs.
Thank you. So I'll take the opportunity just to fill you in a little bit on these 90 students that are working in the community-based vocational education. These students are located around the county at the three Halifax hospital sites where they are interns. They work a regular job day as an intern. They do not get paid because they're interns, but they are learning skills that they need to become employed. We have a little over 90% of them each year get a full-time job or part-time, if that's what they're seeking, at Halifax. We also have a number of students, over 60, that are working at Embry-Riddle, where they are also gaining employable skills so that they can gain a full-time or part-time job if that's what they want after they finally do decide to graduate and become employed. Very excited that this year we have incorporated what we're calling Volusia Search. So it's very similar to Project Search, but we are placing students in our schoolway cafes, in our custodial sites, obviously not where ABM, but our schools that we have custodians there, and on our maintenance teams, where they are also being trained in employable skills. And our goal is to hire at least 10 of our very own students each year in each of these areas so that they can become full-time Volusia County employees.
Thank you. And I know I was gonna. I know I said I was gonna stop on graduation, but just a couple more things. So I just did want to share while we get the video ready for my next bullet for our subgroups, which are SS subgroups that are determined by the state. We had increases in every subgroup in SS. So for the students, the Black graduation rate increased by 6.3%. White graduation rate 4.4%. Hispanic and Latino graduation rate 1.7%. At-risk graduation rate increased by 6.3%. Economically disadvantaged increased by 5%. Students with disability graduation rate increased by 4.5%. And the ELL graduation rate increased by 1.8%. And along with that, with the industry certifications we received, with the CAPE funding, it becomes at least partially self-sustaining when we're able to get those types of FTE additions based on our industry certification pass rate. This video that you're going to see, we kicked off our spring ATC industry certification at Daytona State College, and I was able to visit the welding program that they have at Daytona State College. It was pretty amazing seeing about 90% of the students in the class be Volusia County School students. And another very cool thing about this was that the teacher that teaches a welding class is a Mainland High School graduate. And so now she's bringing, seeing our students go through this. So we're going to play the video for you. I watched it 5 times already because it's just very fun to watch. So thank you.
If I want to do the welding program, and now that I have switched to online, my grades are better. I got a lot more free time, and now I have something that will actually help me do what I want to do.
I think it'll set me up in a future with career because it's something, it's a trade that's not going to end anytime soon. You make good money from it. A lot of people don't know how to do it. So if you can find a good union or something to go to, I feel like it'll set you up for success. I think it's good and important because a lot of kids have a bigger opportunity to do something good with their life. It just opens up their map of opportunities that they can do and just gives them more things to think about and do for their careers when they grow up.
This is the first year they started it, so it's kind of nice that they can go to high school in the morning and be here at night kind of thing. I think they're enjoying it a lot, so it's a really good thing for them to have, I think.
And the last thing I was going to say was that this, you know, we have this program at the Daytona State College main campus, and we also have different programs at the ATC. And this truly is a seamless alignment between all of the goals to be able to accomplish this, because it took everyone to be able to get students there. So thank you.
And I believe at this time we're open for questions from the board.
All right, so they gave us 7 minutes, which is very difficult, so we'll round off with eight. And so we'll start with Ms. Burnett.
I'll defer to Jamie or Ms. Cuthbert.
Like Ms. Haynes?
I'd like to start on page eight. On page eight, which schools, hang on, let me go to it. I'd like a list of which schools are in which category by tier, because I don't recall. I did look to see if we had received that. And then when looking at the visits, is there and it could have to do with the number of schools, but is there a reason why tier 2 received more attention than tier 2.5 at the elementary level?
Yes. And so at the elementary level, because we have 45 elementary schools, mm-hmm. we are the only level that has 2.5 and 1.5. Middle and high school don't have right. those categories. So all of the schools are lumped together, tier 1, 2, and 3, but only elementary has 1.5 and 2.5.
Okay, so if I understand on the graph, that's why it appears that 2.5 had less visits.
Yeah.
Okay, that clears that up. And then on page 9, my question there, when we're looking at the kindergarten numbers, and you said we had 438 more students this year, and we compared it to last year. We know that a lot of kindergarten took a hit last year with parents keeping their children home virtually because of what we were doing with the pandemic. So my question would be, how does that number compare to the year prior to that? Because comparing things to last year, I don't think they give us a valid picture. So I would just like at some point to know, you know, where do we compare to the year before when things were still normal and parents were sending their kids to kindergarten. On page 11, my question there is, as we're going over, actually it would be page 10, I apologize. As we're looking at, here's my thing. I'm seeing a lot of comments, and I hear them as I go into schools, but I'm seeing a lot of comments on social media about the benchmark reading curriculum. And so I would just like some additional information on how we're supporting teachers with that, because the comments that I'm seeing are not positive. It's stating that at the elementary level, teachers are struggling with the benchmark curriculum. I saw a post recently where teachers have been trying to get together in groups, you know, like kindergarten teachers across the district to say, how can we set this up to make this easier for ourselves? And there's something about the video piece and how there's some videos there, but I saw a question where they were saying, could we get together and make some PowerPoints or video presentations that would work more fluidly? And so I just wondered where we were at and what we could do to support our teachers in that. And then my question about first grade, when you're looking at the reading scores for first grade, for where they started at the beginning of the year in ELA and in math, they're significantly low where they started. And so my question there is, did we take a few moments to do an analysis of how many of those children did not have a kindergarten experience that was possibly successful? Meaning, maybe they stayed at home and they actually didn't really complete the virtual learning, or they were doing live and not really participating. I just think it begs to look at that to see who was actually in school, because that first grade, that's significant. And so that tells me they missed out on kindergarten skills. And we know first grade has the largest number of standards that have to be taught truly at the elementary level. And so we need to be putting some interventions or something in place there. Hi, Desiree. I know you want to talk to me about benchmark.
Would you like for me to address it now, or I'm happy to?
So the problem is we only had 7 minutes.
Yeah, so if we can take it as takeaways.
Perfect.
And if you can provide that information to all of us when we have the answer, that'll be great.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Ms. Haynes, are you good?
I had other questions, but I'll put them in an email.
All right. Great. Mr. Persis.
I am here. I'm here. I can't hear me?
We can hear you.
All right. I'm hearing like a bit of echo, so I don't know whether I'm just hearing it or if you guys are hearing it too.
Nope, you sound good to us.
All right, great. That's all that matters. A couple of questions. ESE, the least restrictive environment, I think you said was up to 76%. What is the Fed expectation or the state's expectation in that area?
It's 80%.
80%, okay. I also see where 52% of the teachers at middle school attended the ELA planning. Patty, what's the next step to get more of them involved?
Yes, so we've been working with them also throughout the year. Desiree and her team, they offer, it's really voluntary at this point, Mr. Persis, but those who want to get involved in the extra planning, we just continue to do that as we start to plan for the next curriculum guide. So we will be doing that this spring and this summer. If they do work in the summer, they do get compensated. So those are the ones from last year. So we will continue to recruit more teachers as we can to get ready for next year.
Yeah. Well, I just got to tell you, everyone, Dr. Fritz, I mean, you got to be so proud of your staff and all the teachers. I mean, this is just excellent news. As I go through and read everything and hear everything, there's so much good news in this, if you will, this midterm report out on the strategic plan. Love seeing the high school SAT scores, going up. I was so encouraged by the increase in the math scores at middle school, as well as high school. I'm loving all the new activities and the increased involvement in the science things that we're doing around the county. And just that news we received today about the CTE and the FTE that went way up because of how well our students are doing in the CTE classes. I mean, that's just all fantastic.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Persis. Ms. Cuthbert.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. I'll go quickly, and you can respond to me in an email for all of us, which is just fine with me. I'm referring to page 11 of the PowerPoint right now. I am concerned when you have your progress monitoring report at the end of the third quarter. Please keep in mind that a lot of our district coordinators, coaches, and resource teachers were used as substitutes, where I know Dr. Fritz's dedication to having a certified, well-qualified adult in front of students is very, very important to day-to-day instruction. Still, a lot of these teachers and coaches were redirected away from a lot of the extra work that they've been assigned to do to help. So I would like to know, when you do that at the end of the three quarter, did we slip at all? And if we did, it should be well documented that we did have COVID surge back, and it's really not, you know, the fault of the people who are assigned to do all of this work. So thank you. I'd like to know how many minutes that is for when at the middle school level will be allotted to the middle schools. So I don't know if it's going to be 15 minutes, 20 minutes out of their 6-period day. That would be nice to know. And I want to say thank you to Dr. Fritz and his team for bringing to the school board last year to pay for the SAT. And so parents don't have to worry about it. They don't have to sign up for it. Kids don't have to ignore it, because it's well worth the investment now that we see a year later how much better our students have done and all the concordant scores that they were able to graduate, which I think had a huge impact on our graduation rate. Those kids would have been lost because they didn't pass the FSA, but we got them over across the stage because we were able to allow them the opportunity at school to take the SAT. And I also want to say thank you to all the sponsors who give or offer monetary or other trophies and of rewards for fair winners, and also for all competitions. Without their support of our competitions, a lot of our students wouldn't strive, to compete. And also thanks to those district department coordinators and coaches who sponsor these competitions. They have to give up after school time and Saturdays for awards, not just the competitions, but for the award ceremony. So thank you to all of what doesn't matter what the core class is. It's wonderful. And I'm speaking specifically of the science fairs, especially the Tomoka Science Fair, the Envirothon that Louise has dedicated herself so many years to, and the social studies fairs, the English, the language world fairs. It's remarkable how much activity our students are engaged in. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert. And I have one question. So we've talked about a lot of the things that we celebrate, and I have a question for each one of you, and it's not a gotcha question. You can answer this later. But it is, what is the one thing that does concern you that we're not moving the needle on that keeps you up at night? Because, it's easy to do a report and have the positives, but what is the one thing, and then what is the action plan for that one thing that really just, it's an obstacle? And I ask that only so that we can find ways to remove barriers, should that be possible. So thank you, and that could be a takeaway. No gotcha questions here. All right, we'll move on to the next one.
Thank you very much, sir. I'm going to ask Goal 2 to come forward. Thank you, Goal 1. Good job. Thank you, everybody in the audience that works on Goal 1 as well.
Good afternoon, Chairman Colon, Superintendent Fritz, school board members. I'm very proud to share with you the tremendous headway that we have made in Goal 2. Goal 1 does describe the progress towards the reason that we're all here, and that's student achievement and student learning. Goal 2 is all about the people entrusted to do the work and how our district serves them. Through recruitment, professional learning, leadership, and evaluation, human resources dedicated to ensuring all of our employees are prepared to contribute to the work of increasing student achievement across all levels. Our next slide outlines our metrics of success. The COVID-19 pandemic has impacted our work tremendously. Throughout the year, we have constantly made adjustments in an effort to meet the changing needs of staff and students. Pivoting has become a way of work. While change is constant, we remain committed to the metrics that we all agreed would ensure our students would have the opportunity to learn from the best professionals possible. Having measurable goals has been very beneficial in making decisions during this very unstable time. I am pleased to present in the next few slides our progress towards these metrics. In Strategy 2A, building a cohesive recruitment system that includes innovative recruitment strategy requires a dynamic team that's passionate about providing future educators and support staff the opportunity to impact student lives. Ms. Mahaney and her team are the perfect people to lead this charge. The Volusia County Schools recruitment team shows up. As you can see, Ms. Mahaney's efforts to expand our presence both online and at events has paid off. At each event, the team walks away with more than a few new members to the VCS family. I'd like to point out a few new and innovative ways that we have recruited employees. We have introduced centralized hiring for critical shortage areas. Our six ESE teachers were ultimately hired at a very difficult time of the year to find candidates when no other district was able to find any ESE teachers. Substitute hiring events. A one-stop shop was provided for potential substitutes, resulting in 94 additional substitutes. Our increased online presence and growing our own by ensuring interns stay in our county. I'm very proud of the work the recruitment team has done to accomplish this goal. I'd like to take just a moment to mention the next step for this team. While continuing these innovative and aggressive recruitment strategies, our HR team as a whole is focusing on retention. To ensure we have the data needed to implement a comprehensive retention initiative, we have very recently developed a system for more in-depth exit interviews. Employees who leave our system will receive a personal phone call from one of our leadership team members with specific questions that will allow us to improve our systems and give us feedback for increasing employee satisfaction. Strategy 2B is develop instructional leadership knowledge and capacity in current and aspiring leaders to create a strong talent pipeline. Leadership matters. Dr. Fritz frequently reminds us that building a leadership bench is essential. We have made strides this year in developing our current and aspiring leaders. We began the year with an administrative institute that ensured that the 325 administrators who were present received specialized training and a consistent message. We are utilizing a school SIMS program to afford our leaders the opportunity to participate in leadership training that is based on real situations. This training is very valuable and offers our leaders the opportunity to reflect and practice decision-making through simulations they are likely to encounter in their careers. We also have the Volusia Leads Initiative. It's a program for our teacher leaders that is led by our very own Dr. Balgaman. This inspiring group of teacher leaders are extremely important to the district decision-making process and have been beneficial to all of our leaders. Our next strategy is strategy 2C, strengthening professional learning system. Strategy 2C outlines learning opportunities for our employees. We have several opportunities within contractual work time of our teachers to provide professional learning. This includes the time spent participating in a session regarding meeting the needs of the students with autism during the September Professional Learning Day and Early Release Wednesday Professional Development. Additionally, we have specialized opportunities for clerical, instructional coaches, and school induction teams. I do want to highlight the work of our diversity committee this year. We have a team dedicated to advising and ensuring that diversity and equity conversations are not standalone events in our district. We believe that diversity should be a part of every decision made in our district. Through collaboration with VIEW and the NAACP, our team has made valuable recommendations. While we recognize that this is a work in progress, we are dedicated to ensuring the conversations and actions continue. We are strengthening our professional learning. Strategy 2D is a focus on providing actionable, meaningful feedback that leads to an increase in employee engagement, retention, and performance. Continuous improvement is essential to the success of a school system. As was mentioned in Goal 1, over 1,750 walkthroughs have been conducted for our first and second year teachers. Over 1,000 walkthroughs have been conducted with our teachers who have 3 or more years experience within Volusia County Schools. And over 2,200 announced observation cycles have been conducted on teachers in Volusia, with almost 50% of our teachers having completed two professional learning cycles, and a third of our teachers have completed one professional learning cycle in the first semester. So as you can see, Strategy 2D, we are working to provide actionable feedback for our teachers. One last thing that I want to mention before I turn it over to Goal 3 or answer any questions that you might have is that at the time that we actually wrote this plan, we did not have our payroll department under human resources, and I feel like that as a part of retention, adding payroll to our department has been a significant improvement in what we've been able to do, because we realize that we have to treat our employees right and make sure that we have payroll processes in place. And I just want to mention that Stephanie Workman has done a phenomenal job in making sure that we do have payroll processes in place that meets the needs of our employees and pays our employees on time. So just to acknowledge the efforts of our group, thank you very much for allowing me to present that.
Questions? Thank you so much, Mr. West. We will start with Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Mr. Clone. Thank you, Mr. West. No, I really do not have any questions. I know this is a difficult time for everyone out there trying to recruit teachers, trying to keep the teachers that we have. It isn't a Volusia County a challenge all of its own. It's out there in every district and in every state. So, but I do like the efforts that have been made. I do like all of the strategies that you mentioned. This is the kind of work that just you never meet your goal. As you just have to keep going every single day. You got to just keep fighting and just keep your eyes and ears open. But thank you very, very much.
All right, Ms. Cuthbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one comment. It's on this slide about professional development. We've always talked about instructional and non-instructional, but do we offer professional development for example, our maintenance department? Are they aware of classes that they could attend in order to add more certification or qualifications to their job? And I think if there's more training, they just may not know that it's out there, or they may not want to spend the time searching. But do we have their supervisors in place to keep an eye out where there are ways that they could progress for the next level up job? And even in finance, do finance people have an opportunity for professional development? I didn't know if, and I know through the union has a lot for instructional, but I just thought of all of our workers, because we are a universal microcosm of people, and it would help with retention, I think.
Yes, ma'am. Actually, thank you for bringing that up. That actually, we have implemented under Strategy 2B. It's our leadership, and it's not just instructional leadership. We've also looked to implement some trainings for our, I'm going to call them our operational leadership training as well, Ms. Cuthbert, and that's the growth opportunities that we want to give our folks that are in potential leadership positions in our operational fields, you know, not necessarily our teachers to do so. So, yes, ma'am, we have planned training for those areas, as well as, of course, the specialized training that we have for, as you said, in the maintenance areas. They have their own specialized training for parts of what their jobs are. But yes, the acknowledgement of having an operational leadership training program is recognized in that area of Goal 2B or Strategy 2B. Yes, ma'am, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. West. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Burnett.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, and I know you guys have had a challenge the last 2 years, actually, and yes, you've done a very good job, so thank you for all that. And as Ms. Haynes brought up a minute ago, some things that are, you know, out there on social media, which I'm not a fan of, by the way, but it's out there, so we have to address it. And that was one of them I've seen lately is the hiring of subs, and that there's some people out there that aren't getting return phone calls or something to that nature. So if there's a way that we can address making sure that that group, maybe they don't qualify, I don't know, but if they can at least get a phone call back, maybe it would mitigate some of the negative comments that makes it look like we're just not interested in hiring people or we don't have the ability to do so.
I definitely will look into that and see. Thank you. I appreciate that feedback.
Thank you. And then is there, and I know we've talked about this multiple times, but the screening process, if there's a reimbursement type situation for the screenings, that seems to be a big barrier as well. And one last comment, question, and you can address it later.
Yep.
And in the process of trying to retain people, what is our process for allowing input from the team that's, I call it the end user, the expert user, the teacher, whomever that may be. Mm-hmm. What is that process, and do they see the value in that, and do they get invited to that, basically? So thank you.
Yeah.
And if you need to get back to us later as a group, you can do that as well, but for the sake of time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank
we will. Particularly that first thing in regards to phone calls back to substitutes. We do want to look into that.
I do one comment about that. We have recently updated on our website. There were some extensions that when you went on and clicked, like, for instance, verifications or also with vacancies, because of the way the website was designed, if people went on and just clicked that extension, it went to another place, but we've corrected that. And that happened within the last week. So that, and I do think a phone call or two may have gotten lost in that extension thing, but we have corrected that.
Thank you.
One of the things that you mentioned about the feedback, and I briefly mentioned it here, that we're actually reaching out on our exit interviews. I actually made 18 phone calls this past week to folks who have resigned since October and followed up with them to see. Actually, we've had three of them have said that they're interested in coming back. So that's very exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah, I feel like they're reaching out and letting them know that we're interested in what they have to say on why they left, and their life circumstances have changed. And so, if nothing else, just reaching out to them and making that personalized touch, I think that's a very important piece of that as well. So,
agreed.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes.
Thank you. On page 22, I want to ask just a few questions about the professional learning piece. So, let's just start, for example, with the training on September 20th, meeting the diverse needs of students with autism. This was one of the required Department of Justice trainings.
Yes.
So, my question is, do we know if every teacher was able to participate in it? If there were teachers that were out on that day, or since that time we've hired new employees, what are we doing so that they can have access to that training? Because that training is very important, we know. And so was it just a one-time shot, or have we put into place where as new employees come on, there's a way for them to get the training?
I believe that we did have a makeup training as well. I don't know if when that makeup training was, so if a new employee, for example, was hired, if they'd be able to make that makeup training or not. But I feel like that as a part of the DOJ requirement that we have in place, this is not going to be a one-shot and done deal. This is something that's going to be an ongoing thing. So, yes, Ms. Hay.
Ms. Wiles.
Can you come to the microphone so that they can hear you?
Please.
Otherwise, they won't be able to hear you at home.
What an entrance. Okay. So, yes, that was correct. We will continually train folks as we onboard them. Luckily, we are able to provide them with a recording of that training. The initial training had to be face-to-face. When we have large groups that needed to have it made up, we did that, you know, in person. But as new folks come on board again, any of these trainings would be provided virtual. Well, it has been virtual because we haven't been able to be face-to-face, but it's considered face-to-face over Teams.
Okay. Thank you. And then another thing I've seen a little bit of, and I don't know if the communication's there or we just need to do a little bit better job with it, communicating with teachers who need to either move from a temporary certificate to a permanent certificate or those that need to renew their certificate. I see sometimes like panic, you know, with I'm now looking for courses and I only have a short time to get them in. And so do we have some kind of system set up, or could we look at a system set up where they would get periodic emails, you know, just reminding them that, you know, your certificate ends and, even if it's 2 years out, you have 2 years and you need this many courses or you need to earn this many points.
So one of the things, and it's not actually mentioned here, but it's actually embedded in what we're our HR processes, is reviewing certification. And certification is a huge piece that is an audit trail issue as well. And that's been part of the, from the state auditor, some suggestions that have been made that we have put some improvements in place to do so. A lot of that, or part of that, is communication as well to the employee. But we do send, I'm going to call them reminder communications to employees in regards to what their certification is, when it's due up, and that kind of thing. A lot of what we are looking at is the compliance piece from the state and making sure that we're, for example, notifying parents if someone is out of compliance of their certification, but they're working on it. And that sort of thing. So, yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. That's all I have for today.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes.
And so I have a question.
Yes.
Do we have a way that we measure? So a lot of organizations use Gallup or any employee satisfaction. Do we do anything like that, or have we looked into anything like that where we could gauge employee satisfaction and have that feedback gathered by a third party so that we can not only instill trust in the process but also ensure that we get the feedback and that later that's used to improve our organization? Have we ever considered anything like that?
We don't actually use a third-party vendor because, frankly, we're the school system. We don't have money to spend on that kind of thing. However, we actually do have a pretty, I'm going to call it robust, process of making sure that we are checking. We have, of course, our climate survey that we use on a period or on an annual basis through I think communications, and we do have our school advisor, our SAC communication and climate surveys that we send out there. We're also doing we're doing checks periodically. I'm going to call them randomized checks that we're doing. That is much more pinpointed, much more focused, to be able to go in and talk to teachers. There's an interview process, there's a survey process, and it's actually a pretty rich survey that we do with our groups of teachers. So we are doing that periodically and getting across the entire district, both at elementary, middle, and high school in regards to that, for our school sites particularly.
Great. Thank you. That's all I had.
Thank you, Mr. Carroll.
Do we want to take a 10-minute break, potty break? All right, we'll take a 10-minute break, and we'll be back. All right, it is 2 o'clock. Mr. Persis and Ms. Cuthbert, are you still there?
I am here.
Yes.
Wonderful. Yes. We'll go ahead and get started. Dr. Fritz?
And at this time, it's my pleasure to turn over this next part to Rose Rowland. Board, as we get started into here, I applaud you for recognizing it's extremely important to take care of the hearts of our students so that we can take care of the minds. And that's what this goal 3 is all about, making sure that we are dealing with the emotional health of our children. So, Ms. Rowland.
Good afternoon, Chairman Colon, school board members, and Superintendent Fritz. I'm going to address goal 3, which is safe and supportive environment.
As we all are aware, Goal 3 deals with safe, health, and supportive environment for our students. And there's never been a time like there is now where our kids need our support to be safe and for us to be supportive of them. Though COVID-19 has impacted our work, we remain committed to moving forward with the strategic plan and ensuring our students have a safe and nurturing environment in which to learn. That's our major goal, is for our students to be able to learn. Just a reminder of what our metric of successes are. Suspensions to reduce them from 1920 to 2223 to at least 3,000 or less. We have had some challenges this year. I'm sure that most of you are already aware. Our kids are coming with many types of baggage, and we have to do all we can to help them to remain in school. But we do have an expectation for a certain behavior once they get to us. Chronic absenteeism, returning to our pre-pandemic levels, increase our outcomes for health referrals, increase the parent response when students need glasses or need to go to the dentist or hearing, and we try to provide those services for our students. It's been a challenge this year just a little bit because of a shortage of nurses, but we are holding them at schools where we have the most critical needs, and our students are not, parents are not able to provide those services for their children. And students feeling safe in their classrooms and in their schools, to increase that by at least 5% by 2022-23. Also, I'm going to deal with Goal 3A first, which is to utilize teacher-supported multi-tier system of supports and social-emotional learning practices. Our youth mental health team has transitioned the training for mental health to the onboarding process for our beginning teachers. That will eliminate them being pulled from class to attend these trainings, so they can, once they onboard, that'll be a part of the onboarding process, and they won't have to leave their classrooms to attend this training later in the school year. Our district staff involved with the school's threat assessment, we've trained our school guardians, our SROs, our SRDs, have been trained in the Florida Department of Education and the Office of Safe Schools protocols when it comes to dealing with our threat assessments. And our threat assessments are up, and so we need all those individuals and more to assist us as we deal with our children who are having thoughts of suicide, thoughts of harming themselves, harming others, and so we have more support in our schools to deal with that as well. Additional trainings are scheduled for district mental health team members in cognitive behavior and intervention for trauma in schools for grades 5 through 12, and we have a program called Bounce Back for elementary school teachers and students to deal with children that are dealing with trauma, because we see more and more that our kids are dealing with more child abuse, sexual abuse, just mental abuse, and they're just out, and some students are homeless. So there's been training that has been held to deal with our students in that area. And our mental health team is deeply involved. As a matter of fact, we met with Halifax Behaviorists this morning to get some more processes in place for our students, because there is a lack of response for students that are on a waiting list. And so we're going to get more of our outside vendors involved to assist us with assisting those students that are on the waiting list, because students can't wait when they have an issue that they're dealing with. So we're involving more outside agencies. My district MTSS leadership team has been formed. And that team has worked, it's under the direction of Mr. Vaughn and Ms. Tamika Harrison. And it goes across goals 1 and 3. And we work simultaneously to deal with the heart, but we can deal with the head, because our students do need tiers of support. And with MTSS, we have 3 levels, tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3. Tier 1 is what every student in our schools get. Tier 2 is a little bit more intense of support, and you get to Tier 3, then it gets more intense. And so we're working with Goal 1 to make sure that we can assist our kids. And the trainings, some of our employees have already been trained. Our intervention teachers have been trained. Our academic coaches have been trained. Our principals have been trained. And our elementary and secondary assistant principals have been trained as well. And we'll revamp in that process. We can look at the entire child, look at the whole child, not just academics, not just discipline. In the past, it's kind of been centered around discipline, but we need to look at the whole child, the heart and the mind. So that process is being revamped at this time as we speak. Our psychologists have opened the school year up with 454 referrals, and of course that fluctuates some because we do have parents that think want their children evaluated because it's the learning loss that has happened. Like the kids that are in second grade, they miss first grade and some of kindergarten, so they are behind. So we have a long list of parents that want their children to be evaluated, and of course, we have a window of 60 days to get those evaluations done. to make sure our kids are being being evaluated as possible, as soon as possible, to see if there's see what we can do to intervene. We don't want to make it like it's a direct road to ESE, because some parents think of it as being that way, but that's not our intentions, to get our kids directly in the ESE window. D&Es were reduced from 1217 down to 120, and it may be down a little bit more right now as we track down students that were on home education that came back, then possibly didn't show up, or those students that are homeless that don't have proper clothing to come back. So our school social workers are working really hard to meet with those families and to locate those students that have not returned to us. Our chronic absentee rate compared to last year is down a little bit. It was 31.3% last year this time, and it's down to 30.4%. So some of our children returned back to us, and they're coming to school more regularly. And I'm sure it's probably the support they receive when they get to the schools and someone they can actually talk to once they get there. Our district staff is working with our families as homeless to ensure every student receives services. We have seen a slight increase in our homelessness. It's at above 2,000-plus students that are homeless right now. But we did receive a homeless grant to help with our children that are homeless. And what we've done with some of that money that we've received, our plans is to hire 3 case managers to oversee and support our children academically and provide emotional and social support. And we're also going to use some of that money to offer scholarships for Before the Bell and extended day learning. So those kids that don't come in the mornings or late, we're going to provide scholarships for some of those students that want to come to Before the Bell or extended day at their schools. And we're also going to contract with certified teachers to go into Before the Bell and extended day to provide tutoring and support with those kids, students that are in there. We won't just target the homeless students, but children that are in there can also participate, don't necessarily have to be homeless, but it's geared toward our homeless students that attend Before the Bell and extended day. Also, we provide Voltran tickets for the families that don't have vehicles. We provide hotspots for students that live in our areas that have very poor connectivity. Connectivity is not good. And also, we have about 100 unaccompanied youth. Those are the students that are here in our district, and they don't have a parent, a legal parent at all, but they do have homes where they are allowed to house, and we're going to provide those students with telephones, because when they get into trouble, they don't have a way to call anyone. We've had students that have called us at 1 o'clock in the morning because their house parent has, you know, gotten upset with them and need to find a place to go. So we're going to provide those students with cell phones so that they can have a place to make sure that they can call us if they're not safe. And also, with our videos, we're going to get our district advisory curriculum committee involved in those videos as well that we show for the mandated videos. We've already worked on getting a link to put on our website with those videos, but we will be opening up to those parents to come and sit with us. And I think each one of you submitted a name, and those are the ones that we will be inviting to sit with us as we vet those videos that we need to show. And it'll be on our website. And what we plan to do is, even videos that are being shown during the first quarter, we will put those videos on all at one time on that link, which we're planning to do, so that parents can go on that link and look at those videos and give us feedback before we show it to any students at all. So we'll do 3 videos the first quarter. If it's 3 videos, those 3 videos will be put on the link, and the parent will have as much time as they need to go on and look at those videos. We're going to try to do it as soon as possible, at least 2 weeks in advance, so parents can go on and look at those videos. And we're also looking at developing our own videos because we know what our students need. So we're going to look at developing our own videos. We've also looked into Lawrence Kids. It is a nonprofit organization, and it has videos for elementary, middle, and high school. So we're going to look at that and see where we fall and how it looks for our students and do a vetting process with them as well. But we are working to make it better so that we can still service our kids and remain within the law. 3B. Standardize discipline procedures and provide consistent alternative suspension. We provided trainings, and we've done diversity training. We did trainer-trainer with Mr. Chester Wilson. We trained our school counselors, and they in turn held a diversity training for their staff at their schools. And also we have restorative practices training that has been under Mr. Nick Prince, and he's gone out and he's trained. But it's been a little tougher this year to train because of, you know, having those individuals being pulled to sub. And so we know that our children need to have a certified teacher in front of them, so those individuals have been pulled and not necessarily receive the training that we would like them to train, but hopefully next year we get back on where we need to be to make sure that we address those issues those areas of diversity training and restorative practices. Redness SEO and climate restorative practice support, all of our school councils have been trained, and they provide weekly support groups as they are able to. When students come, they kind of group them, and they hold small sessions for those students. Our mental health team goes out when students are having a tough time at school, and they support those students at that school. And what we also plan to do is add mental health teams at middle schools as well next year. We have them at high schools now, but we plan to implement teams at the middle school levels as well so that they can have their own team at their school and not have to deal with the travel time. But we're planning to put mental health teams at each one of our schools. Our bullying task force is being headed by Mr. Vaughn, and this involves students, parents, teachers, administrators, and they're looking at ways. We have already changed the bullying process where not the victim does not get the HOPE scholarship, but this actual suspect or offender actually gets offered the HOPE scholarship. We don't want to punish the victim twice by having them being bullied as well as having to change schools as well. So this committee has been working, and they meet once a month, and they're getting kind of getting a process together for next year, the end of this year and next year to follow when it comes to preventing bully, having bully prevention prevented in our, having bully prevention in our schools from K through 12. PBIS is next year. We will implement it in all of our schools. PBIS is nationally recognized. It's a research-based program, and it has been used in many places. And we do have three schools that are recognized by the state as model PBIS schools, two elementary schools and one middle school. So PBIS is a it's known to work. It has been tested, and the results have been good. So we are planning to have all of our individuals trained by this summer so that next year we can hit the ground running. And what those will also do is if our students move from school to school, they won't have to learn a different method or culture when they go from one school, may have CHAMS or may have the house system. So now when they move from school to school, it will be PBIS, and there won't be anything to get adjusted to because all of our schools will actually be using the PBIS format. And middle school reformation is going to help us quite a bit in our discipline area because there will be less movement with our students having to go outside and move around. They'll be in a teaming process. They'll be in the same building for the most part. And also the less movement means less time for students to get into altercations. And I think that the students will also feel a sense of teaming as well, that this is my team, and they'll start to learn how to respect each other and accept each other for who they are. So the middle school reformation is going to help our department as well. Our suspension data is being monitored monthly and adjusted as needed. Our suspensions are up a little bit because of what our kids are going through, and they bring a lot up to school here with us, and we have to deal with it. Even though they spend only 10% of the day with us, a lot of things that they go through, they bring it to us, and we just do our best to make sure we are dealing with it to support our students as much as we possibly can. 3C, support school leaders to build a positive school culture at their buildings. Our mental health team has been busy, and as we all know, this has not been a typical year. However, we're taking proactive measures for next year. Our students only, like I said, spend 10% of their day with us, but a lot of their issues kind of land with us, and so we have to deal with those students and provide them support. And as you can see, our mental health teams, we have 11 of them, they've conducted 1,726 threat assessments to date. And you can see the numbers there, and it's unfortunate, but our elementary schools' numbers are much larger than our middle schools and our high schools. And we have mental health teams that are spending time in our elementary schools because that's where a lot of our kids are having issues. They're younger, they don't understand, and so we have to kind of walk them through what they're going through, whether it's trauma at home or whatever they're going through in school. And some of the kids not doing well that are accustomed to doing well, they have issues. And so my mental health team is there to assist those students when they have issues at school. And so Ms. McIntyre also collects data quarterly to see how we can improve our process or what we need to do to improve our process. And she also looks at what is the trend. Is it more kids that are being traumatized with mental abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, or just not doing well, not being able to handle what is going on in school? So she looks at that data to see where the trends are and the ones that need to be, things that need to be handled in a more of an efficient way. Our discipline matrix has been updated to include the DOJ language and requirements, As we know now, it used to be a time that ESC students had to have a meeting when they got a number of suspension days, but this now applies to GNET students as well. And when a GNET student gets 5 days, it requires a meeting to be held with that family, with those students, to see how we can help them along the way. Okay, and goal 3D, I'm going to ask Chief Newman if she will come and speak to that for us.
Good afternoon. So 3D, enhancing support around school safety. Some of the things mentioned here we continue to work on, so they were listed on our last meeting together, but it's because they're really, really important and we want to get this right. So enhancing the safety and security website, we strive to put updated information on our website, so not only can our parents find information, but our faculty and staff can find information on what to do in a crisis and an active assailant incident, and also in reunification efforts. So these are ongoing efforts that we're working on. We provide regular feedback to our principals through assessments on their campuses. This happens by DOE, Office of Safe Schools. They do surprise visits on our campuses. But our security operations team, we do 4 assessments on every school campus every year. This is new for this year. And this has been very beneficial to our principals as we're able to provide them timely feedback. We work with them as a team. We walk their campus. We make sure that not only are they compliant with state statute and what they're required to have on their campus, but we also provide input and we have suggestions on how to truly improve the safety and security of their campus. Sometimes that means reminding them about having staff members at their gate, at their single point of entry, to have people there monitoring the gates, checking for student IDs, making sure their faculty members are wearing IDs and things of that nature. So very good feedback from our 4 assessments that we're doing on campus. Syntegics Crisis Alert, we have fully implemented this crisis alert, panic alert in our district. Now we are focusing on more training and following up with those individuals who had accidental alerts, because that has happened. So we've been very transparent with our parents when it's happened, when an accidental lockdown has occurred on a campus. We work very closely with Kelly Schultz and her team to put out a very quick and thorough message. We take ownership. We say, you know, faculty member accidentally set off our panic alert system, and let them know. Because as we all know in the district, parents are concerned. They hear things. They call. They ask questions. So we want them to have the information directly from us on what's going on. The camera project, we continue on our camera project, enhancing the surveillance systems on our middle and high schools. And after we complete that project, we'll move on to our elementary schools. Fencing projects, most recent projects have been approved for Campbell and Mainland, so we'll move forward with those. Our threat assessment teams, as you know, are comprised of not only our faculty and staff members, counselors, but it also involves law enforcement. Our district created monthly threat assessment team meetings where they meet, they talk to law enforcement, they get input from law enforcement on the threat assessments that have occurred the prior month, and they get feedback. And this is also kind of a monitoring tool to watch those kiddos that might really need extra resources or help. So this has been a really great new trend for us, or thing for us to do within the district. One thing that I don't have listed here but I do want to mention is that we're not just providing safe and secure atmospheres for our students. We want to focus on our principals, faculty, and staff as well. And how we have improved as part of goal 3 is we've created a new security operations center. As you may have heard, the security operations team now has individuals working nights, weekends, and holidays to ensure that our principals, faculty, and staff can focus on being a principal, faculty, and staff. They aren't being called at 2 o'clock in the morning to respond to intrusion alarms or fire alarms. We have people dedicated that are working those hours and responding and addressing issues. The principals, this was very well received by the principals. They are able to stay at home and get their sleep and come to school the next day ready and prepared to educate those kiddos. So we are very pleased with this new system that's in place. And like I said, we've gotten very positive feedback on that. Another positive that we've implemented as part of this strategy under Mrs. Rowland's tutelage is that we have a one-stop shop for our principals. We have heard our principals
explain to us that they are having to call 3 and 4 different district level people to report incidents. And we constantly evaluate how we handle communications in our district. And I'm going to tell you it's not perfect right now, but we continue to work on it. So for now, our new procedure is that our principals and their team are calling the Security Operations Center unless it's an emergency. If it's an emergency, they're still calling 911 so that we can get our first responders en route to the campus. Next phone call is to the Security Operations Center. They're passing along their information, their notifications to the call taker, and then the call taker is dispatching out that information to the appropriate leader, department head, or individuals who need to take action. So in the case of if it's related to a security incident, they're sending that information to me and my team, and then we're responsible for reaching out to the principal if we need additional information or follow-up. So again, very well received by the principals, and our hope is to reduce that burden of them having to reach out to 3, 4, sometimes 5 individuals to report significant events on their campuses. Upcoming trainings and activities, we continue to work on our BDA, or bidirectional amplification system. This, as you recall, will recall, is we had our campuses tested, and 22 of them failed the communications test, meaning that we need extra equipment on those campuses so that our first responders and our guardians can communicate effectively in case of a crisis. So we continue to work on that, and we are also developing some training for our campus advisors. We have about, I think it's 100 campus advisors across the district. We are going to put them through some security training just to add as a force multiplier to have extra eyes and ears on the campus to assist our principals and instructional staff with those security measures on campus. And with that, that's all I have.
All right, very good. Thank you for that. And so we will start with Ms. Burnett.
Thank you. Very good presentation. Thank you very much. One thing that I heard when you were talking was is we're not perfect and we have opportunities every day, and that's important that we all understand that we do have opportunities to learn from and that we're willing to learn from them, so thank you. I know a couple of times we've talked about the social-emotional learning here at the meetings, and the staff that is providing some of this to our students may not always be trained. And I know you said that there's some training going on, but some of that training is just never going to be enough for certain situations. So, and I know we can't really address that right here at this moment, but maybe we can talk about that. And Mr. Cologne may have more to add to that as well. But there's just some situations you can't be prepared for that we may need different avenues to pursue with that. And then I had one other comment, and it related to the committee that we're forming for the parents being involved with the curriculum. And I just wanted to say I appreciated that. And hopefully one day, and Mr. Klum, maybe you can approve this, but maybe after they've had a few meetings, can we have a presentation at a workshop to see how that's going and how the input from the families and the community is involved? So that we can also learn where they think we can improve upon different ways of communicating or different topics to be addressed. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes.
Thank you. So, Ms. Rowland, you reported you have an increase in families that are homeless, along with our students. And I know you can answer it at a later date. But what's happened with our number of unaccompanied youth? Has that also increased? Can you share at some point just how many students fall into that category? Because that's a really tough category for our students. And then when talking about the Bullying Prevention Task Force, I'd like a little bit more information on that, like who's on the committee, and do we have any parents or community members, or is it just completely internal staff?
No, it's parents in there as well.
Okay.
We have parents and students that are part of the committee. As a matter of fact, we were at Halifax Behavior this morning, and one of the parents were there that was on the committee. So it consists of parents, students, administrators, and teachers, and okay. District personnel. Yes.
So I would just like a little more information on that committee and like who's participating in it. Okay. And I do appreciate that we have outside individuals also on it. And then when we talk about the mental health teams, and this may be something you shared before, and I apologize if you have and I don't remember it, but how many individuals are on a mental health team? Because you said we have a total of 11 teams, but how many individuals are on a team?
We have about 21 members of a mental health specialist right now that we deal with, mental health therapist, rather, that we deal with, and we try to put at least 4 at each high school. And what we do is if there's an issue at middle or elementary school, we dispatch those therapists to those campuses to handle any issues that may be there as far as handling a Baker Act, because we wanted our staff to be kind of in charge of Baker Acts instead of calling law enforcement, because we can take time to sit and talk with those children. Sometimes they do calm down and we call the parents. So there's a team at each high school, and it's usually between 3 and 4 individuals that are at those high schools.
Okay, and so since there's 11 teams and there's 10 high schools, where's the 11th?
The other ones are in my office. They take the phone calls that as they come in on an emergency basis, and then they kind of dispatch those calls to the appropriate personnel.
All right. And then I want to thank you, Chief Newman, because trust me, that piece of taking off from principals and or sometimes district staff of getting the phone call to report to a building is very much appreciated, because at one time I had to do that role, and it's hard to wake up at 2:00 in the morning when you get a phone call and have to drive and check on a building or a school campus and go back. So I appreciate that we have set someone up that's covering that. And I am also very happy to hear that we're going to do training for the campus advisors. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I'm fully supportive of the training. I think Ms. Rowland was talking about the training and the areas of PBIS training for all schools. And I know we've done other trainings with restorative practices and our diversity training too. I'm hearing so many good things about that PBIS program, and I'm very happy to see that we'll have that at all of the schools. I think that will really be beneficial. Just wanted to give, as everyone else has said, just a bunch of kudos to Chief Newman and all the things that you are doing and all the trainings and keeping us informed on a sometimes hourly basis as things go, but I think you're just doing an awesome job, and your whole team, and just the way you keep us informed, and I have to piggyback on what Ms. Hames just said. As a former principal, yes, I did not like getting that call at 3:30 in the morning to report to the school, so I know they are loving that, as well as the assistant principals who were doing some of that work too. So a super job, and providing excellent training to all of our guardians too. I especially want to commend you on doing those 4 assessments per school every year. I mean, that takes a lot of time, but that certainly keeps everybody on their toes, and just makes everyone keenly aware of just how important all these safety procedures and security protocols, how important they are. You just don't know when something's going to happen at your facility. And I also just wanted to shout out, if I can, Mr. Chair, about the good news our county received through the sheriff's office, that we are going to have finally in Volusia County a juvenile assessment center, which is something Carl Persis has wanted for about a decade, and we just could never get the funding from the legislature. But this is going to be funded now through the federal funds, and so I'm just really excited about that. And I know Chief Newman and all of our school district staff, Rose Rowland's office, we'll all be involved in setting up this juvenile assessment center the right way. again, I was just want to say this area of discipline, safety is a huge challenge. It's a huge challenge everywhere, and we do have troubled youth in our area, it isn't an easy fix. It's not a quick fix, and it takes people who are passionate about children and have the knowledge and have the skills and really want to help. And I'm really proud of where we're headed here in Volusia County. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Persis. Ms. Cuthbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to keep an eye on the repeated referrals. I do know that is in Dr. Fritz's evaluation. That's information that is very important to me. Anybody can have a bad day, but it's the chronic rule breaker, I think, that we need to pay attention to, which is why the board several years ago voted to have an extra assistant principal or a TOA at every middle school to assist in those repeated offenders. We all know that aggressive behavior is up, and so I think that's something that's very important for the parent committee who's working with Mr. Vaughn to analyze. When it comes to bullying, a lot of the aggression is the bullying, and some of it, and I don't know the percentage, some of it is not on our campuses, it's off campus. And I've noticed lately a lot of off-campus grudges have come onto our campuses and erupting on that, and so our own personnel have to deal with it. Our teachers and administrators are dealing with much more physical issues, being accosted and bit and kicked, and it's not easy to be in public education these days, so I greatly appreciate all the work you are doing to help solve our children's issues, and it does take a whole community to address the issue. So thank you for all your patience with our children and the continued efforts to handle that. But thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And I do have one question. How do we define homeless? You said there's 2,000 students or so that are homeless in our district. How does that defined?
Well, when they come in and say they're homeless, we are not allowed to ask them any question after that. So it's kind of a self-reported issue. Because they go to the schools and register, and that's how we kind of get our account, is from the schools.
But to clarify, you can be homeless and not living with your right. family. So you can be living in a dwelling right. with an aunt or an uncle and still be categorized as homeless. So it is one of those that when they do come in and say that they are homeless. Now, there's also situations where I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Rowland, we can actually say that someone is homeless. So if we know a child is at a shelter or someplace yes. along those lines, then we can certainly yeah. find that.
If you're not living in your own under your own dwelling that your mom and dad actually is purchasing or buying or paying rent, then if you live with a cousin, you can be considered homeless. If you're living with a grandmother, really you can be considered homeless if it's not your own structure that you're living in where your parents actually live.
I'd be curious to see the breakdown of by school, how many students are categorized as homeless, because it begs to wonder. I know you mentioned a lot of the community groups that help us as well, but sometimes if you don't know it's a problem in your own community, you really, we may be underutilizing the generosity of folks who would be willing to assist those students in the case. And I know that, you know, I personally know a friend who lives in an RV park, and so they are considered homeless because they don't technically have a home, but they have chosen to live in an RV park, and that's what they call home, not because they're poor, but because, and so I know that that also fell into the category of being homeless, even though they're where they want to be. So I'd be curious to see what that is, just so we could engage the rest of our community as well. Very good. Thank you, Dr. Ferris.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Team 3. Goal 3, appreciate it. We're going to call up Goal 4.
Good afternoon, Board Chair Colon, board members, and Dr. Fritz. As we look at our strategic plan goals of high-quality instruction, high-quality staff, providing a safe, supportive environment, and communication and community engagement, it's vitally important that we align our resources and our operational processes so that we're all in the same boat, all rowing in the same direction so that we can achieve our goals. And that's what Goal 4 is about. It's about our resources and our operational processes. So if we look at our strategies under Goal 4, we'll see strategically deploy technology through equitable and standardized processes while empowering our employees to access and utilize those resources effectively. You'll also see that we're increasing our operational efficiency across our departments and divisions and analyzing, reallocating revenue and expenditures in alignment with our strategic priorities. So part of ensuring that our resources and our operational processes are aligned are some metrics of success. And under this, you'll see operational efficiency, where we're working to improve our KPIs from 40% in SY19-20 to 70% in SY22-23, as well as maintaining a minimum of a 5% unrestricted fund balance. For Goal 4A of deploying our technology through equitable and standardized processes and empowering our educators and staff to utilize those resources, we have a few objectives that we're working on. One is student access to one-to-one devices. So under that, we've purchased some additional iPads and laptops that the board has approved. We're also now looking at our student growth and our population estimates so that we can stay ahead of the curve moving forward so that we have enough devices for our what we call our loaner fleet as well as our growth that we have each year. We're also working to increase our technology support and our digital learning staff to assist in managing technology and ensure that we're getting successful integration and adoption of that technology. So with that, we have supplemental support that we're getting contracted under our ESSER funds so that we can put more boots on the ground out in the classrooms to make sure that we're getting the support there that we need. We're also implementing what we're calling our PTAC process and shifting from tech support or our tech support from a break-fix model to a technology adoption and engagement model through the technology adoption framework. So as we start to do this, we're looking at creating a technology acquisition process inside of our Incident IQ program that we just purchased and we're in the process of standing up right now. So teachers, other employees, if they're looking at a technology solution that they would like to get, they can put in just a regular ticket and that will get routed through into our process for that acquisition. We're also utilizing our ITF staff to guide other departments and divisions through this PTAC process that I'll talk about here in a second. We're also looking at our current and our future needs of our end users and creating our trainings to support implementation, adoption, and usage. So throughout all of this, our main goal right now in the ITS division is to shift from traditional IT to ed tech with a focus on teaching and learning and what we're here to do. So through that, we're implementing this PTAC process that I talked about, and that is planning or problem of practice. So we're evaluating problems of practice throughout the district and looking for solutions that we believe will be viable to that. Then we'll be implementing those technology solutions, focusing on training our internal ITS staff as well as the staff that will be using those solutions, focusing in on adoption and engagement, and then finally continuous improvement, because just because we've been able to find a really good product or solution to our current problem, we need to continuously evaluate and improve in order to move forward and make sure that we're doing the best job that we can. So we've sent out a baseline assessment through our user support digital transformation survey, and we've been getting results back through that, and we're evaluating those results to look for our opportunities for improvement to adjust our plan. We also have a SAMR model learning walk tool that we're now working with our teaching, leading, and learning division, to incorporate into their standardized learning walk tool. We're also highlighting and celebrating digital transformation days. So Computer Science Education Week, Digital Citizenship Week, Digital Learning Day, and we're really focusing in on the SAMR model for technology adoption and integration. We're also looking at clearly defining our business processes, our expectations of use, in our work towards improving efficiency and effectiveness. So when we're looking at implementing our software, we're also looking at what software we're implementing and what ROI we're getting on that software. So we've just purchased a tool that will allow us to scan our whole network. We'll be able to see all the software that's being used, and we'll be able to start measuring that ROI and whittling down unuseful or non-return on investment softwares. We're building a technology solutions catalog right now so that our users know what software and hardware are already available to them. So before requests come in, they'll already know what's available, what's been pre-approved, and we're going to guide our folks towards those pre-approved technology solutions. We are also working to implement something that will allow us to really capture data utilization or on the software and hardware that we're using so we can see where we need to put our efforts and our resources to get the best bang for our bucks. We're also looking at a digital form solution. We're leaning towards Adobe Sign right now so that we can reduce the amount of paper that we're using and improve some processes and efficiency there. And we're looking at the current district technology solutions that we have and upgrading them as needed. So I'll now pass it on to my colleague, Dr. Shanoff, to talk about operations services.
Thank you, Dr. Phillips. Good afternoon, Chair Colon, board members, Dr. Fritz. It's my pleasure to go over the KPIs within Goal 4B Operations Services. Starting with transportation services, our KPI is to ensure that the routes maintain adequate average bus occupancy, or ABO, so our routes run with enough students to ensure that we maximize the routes and the use of space on our buses. Obviously, the bus driver shortage has required us to focus in on this particular topic, and we've had to become very resourceful, moving from 202 routes down to 172. We have 172 drivers. So we're about 30 routes below where we would normally be in a normal year. So our ABO at October FTE was at 117.3. What that means is that 117 students will be transported between three different routes for a particular driver on a bus on a given day. So when route combining needs to take place, our routers have to ensure that we have enough seats on every bus for every student. One seat, one student. That is our policy. The KPI for us to remain on the published arrival schedule, our OTA rate in 2021 was 87%, which is 1% below industry minimums pre-COVID. I'm pleased to say that due to some very good rerouting in the morning, we're doing a much better job of getting our students to school on time. Afternoon, we become very dependent upon certain traffic conditions in and around schools, and also rush hour. And we are also experiencing some delays because we are doing some route combining. But of course, our main goal is to make sure that students get to school on time to maximize their learning. In purchasing and warehouse services, obviously we look at contract negotiation and cost avoidance. Most of this takes place in the fourth quarter when we look at contract renewal. So what you see is a not very large number, $501,000. But again, we do not do a majority of our contract renewals until we get to the fourth quarter. So we expect this number to increase substantially as we move into the third and fourth quarters. Schoolway Cafe. Schoolway Cafe operates as an enterprise, and we look at the ratio of expenses to revenue indicates the financial health of Schoolway Cafe. Right now, we are at 85.96%, which means that we are in a very healthy place, no pun intended, as it relates to our financials in Schoolway Cafe. Let me remind the board that we had to make a shift in our Schoolway Cafe delivery model from a direct ship to schools to a centralized warehouse and then re-engineering that delivery model back out to schools. Essentially, Schoolway Cafe has become the district's customer, and Schoolway Cafe pays a per-case amount that's a handling fee that allows our warehouse to go ahead and take care of all of the costs associated with delivering food. Those have not been factored into the number that you see here yet. Facilities planning and construction. Our KPI is to develop a proactive change order management strategy that allows us to realize savings from owner direct purchasing. Right now, we're on track, $6.2 million to meet where we were last year. I expect through more value engineering, but again, when you look at how owner direct purchasing works, your savings is on sales tax that you don't need to pay, that the contractor would have to pay. In this particular case, because we're seeing cost escalations, we are likely to increase our savings in owner direct purchasing just simply because our costs are escalating. Facilities operations and maintenance, we have seen thus far a 2% reduction in work orders exceeding 30 days open over last year. Some of our limitations include materials taking longer to receive, absenteeism, and holiday break. When we're comparing the last 2 years of work orders, we can see that the proactive work orders have increased as opposed to reactive, which means that when techs are on sites, they are noticing things before they leave that require repair and fixing them before they leave. That is considered a proactive repair. Our techs are doing a great job out in the field. Our Schoolway Cafe professionals are doing a great job, and our bus operators and our bus assistants are equally doing a good job. Before I pass it along, I do want to say that we have done a great job utilizing each other within operation services. Where normally you see our departments operating as silos, we are not. Schoolway Cafe and transportation services are using each other's employees to fill staffing gaps through an MOU. Design and construction and maintenance meet biweekly. They've already accounted for $600,000 in project savings costs just by communicating biweekly on their project list. Schoolway Cafe and the warehouse have partnered to centralize food distribution. And maintenance and student transportation services have combined White Fleet under student transportation services, sharing staff to ensure a smooth transition. It's now my pleasure to introduce Lisa Sneed, who will take us to Goal 4C.
Good afternoon, Chair Colon, board members, Dr. Fritz. Goal 4C is analyze revenue and expenditures to align with strategic priorities. And thanks to the emergency secondary relief funds, the ESSER funds, we were able to divert $154.7 million away from the general fund over to ESSER funds to help support and sustain our schools through the various challenges that have been presented as a result of the pandemic. One of the things that we do look at very closely, with 80% of our budget going towards salary and wages, really looking at how we allocate our staff is very important, and we have this unique allocation process where our schools are provided with staffing levels based on the number of FTEs that they have, and we also have a position review committee where every time a position comes open, we look at that. That's the committee is comprised of Dr. Fritz, Dr. Balgobin, Mark West, and myself, and we meet weekly to make sure that we're not just refilling positions, but that we're looking to see what the functions of those jobs are, and we're making sure that we're utilizing our staff in the best possible way. I will say that in terms of our unit allocation process, we are very generous compared to other districts. Although we have formulas, we also have a process where if there are just needs out there in the schools that aren't being met based on our standard formulas, we talk to our principals about that, we talk to our assistant superintendents, and we always put people where they need to be to make sure that the children have the support that's needed. But through that position review committee, as I suggested, we have been able to collapse positions, especially when it comes to positions at the district level, in order to recognize savings, and we'll continue to bring those types of opportunities forward. On the Medicaid administering claim process, we've changed the way that that's done, and we work very closely with Ms. Wiles and her group, and we've been able to bring in $3.9 million of revenue last fiscal year. It's a very big increase from previous years, and it's really a more significant the number than a lot of districts are getting, so we're proud of that. So just to kind of wrap it up, though, in terms of the ESSER dollars, again, which we are very, very thankful that we have been able to increase our general fund balance. As you recall, last summer when I came into this position, Moody's had rated us with a negative financial outlook. The district now has a stable financial outlook, and that has benefited us because we've gotten good ratings on our bonds. We're not paying more money because we're in a more stable financial position. Also, with the ESSER funds, we recently, when ESSER 3 came out, we surveyed all of our stakeholders. We surveyed our parents, we surveyed our principals, we surveyed our teachers, we surveyed our community members to see how they wanted to see those funds utilized. And overwhelmingly, the two areas that they wanted to see funded were staff retention, which the school board has now put a plan together, and we have a plan to get the minimum teacher salary to $47.5, and also to provide our veteran teachers with equal pay increases. And so all of that was done as a result of the feedback that we got through that survey. And all of these things we are hopeful will help with employee retention, although we know that this is an issue that, you know, the entire United States is dealing with, not only in education but in other areas. But we are aggressively working on that to try to mitigate the losses there. And then we're also looking at doing a new program for employee mental health and wellness. And that's something that you all just approved a position for that. And there will be a lot of new things being rolled out there with hopefully a lot of support and connection to our employees. So with that, I will turn it over to, if you have any questions, we are happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll start with Mr. Persis.
All righty. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gosh, this is such a huge area of it covers so many things. I just wanted to say that I just got to give a shout out just right away to Dr. Shanoff, Dr. Phillips, Ms. Sneed. I think you all are just doing an awesome job. I mean, since the three of you have come on board, there has definitely been a big change in just the way that we operate. And I'm very comforted knowing that the three of you are on board and have the knowledge that you all have. I want to also piggyback on, I think, what Dr. Shanoff said about giving thanks to all of our transportation people, our schoolway, cafe, facility operations, mechanics, techs, all those folks out there at the maintenance. You know, they're just doing this job every single day and working hard, and I love how they're helping each other too, transportation and schoolway, cafe. That's awesome, and just the way like maintenance and facilities folks do too. So I think that it's all great. Always, it's great news to hear that the district now has a stable financial outlook rather than otherwise. So that was good news to hear. I think we have to just continue to find the resources so that we can pay and reward our employees the way we would really want to. That's always a challenge for us, but again, I'm greatly appreciative of the leadership that we have in these areas. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Ms. Cuthbert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, I saw where we had purchased new technology and some programs for our maintenance and facilities people about a year ago. And once again, that has paid off through better communication, and therefore we are saving more money in the long run. So the investment in the technology that we have agreed to purchase and the programs that we have on board has again saved us money in the long run.
And I'm very, now that we're at the end of this, I also would like to say, I'm in my eighth year of serving on the board. This is the first strategic plan that is clear, that has been reporting an overall condition. This is almost like a statement, or the state of the district, the school district's performance, and the serving, how we service our students, our teachers, all of our staff, and in our communities. And it's wonderful to see what we, what taxpayer money we are investing is reaping benefits and rewards in all ways, not just in funding, but in assistance and help to our students. Our goals are to increase wages as much as we can. We are grateful that people are paying attention to a lot of the problems that we have and are willing to assist us in meeting improvement goals. And it's very nice to see all of this coming together. And I know a lot of this is working overall, and people at the campus level or who are actually doing the work may have a different view or a different perception. Let's also keep track of how campus people view or what their perceptions are of this, and it's always nice to celebrate not just all these, but throughout the year, Mr. Chairman, it would be nice to have people come in, as we always have, to say, this is what we invested in, and here are the rewards, and it's the details. And so much of this, we don't have the specific people they are helping. It's always nice to have where we are actually making lives better. For example, having principals not have to answer their phones. And as a wife of an assistant principal who got phone calls 1, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, late at night, missed a lot of family outings, it not only affects the staff member, but also the family who are disturbed because of those phone calls. And so it's very nice to hear that specific assistance we do, how we are reworking our usual way of doing things to modernize it and to make it easier for our staff, no matter who they are, whether they're a paraprofessional, a bus driver, a principal, a teacher, or a district staff. So thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Ms. Haynes?
I'm actually going to put my questions in an email for time's sake.
Great. Ms. Burnett?
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to all of you. And I come from an area where I work outside of here that really depends on teamwork. And so congratulations on getting the team to work together and see how valuable that is. And then I just have one question, and that would be, Ms. Sneed, you mentioned how we've collapsed jobs and formed different efficiencies, and it would be nice if the board could get a breakdown of the positions that we have currently, maybe a historical 4 or 5 year outlook on what we've done historically and how we have those positions now and where they've collapsed, what we still have going on.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't have anything. Dr. Fritz.
Thank you, team. This time I'm going to bring up Ms. Schultz and her team as we tackle Goal 5, Communications and Community Engagement.
Good afternoon, Chairman Colon, members of the board, Dr. Fritz. I'm Kelly Schultz, Director of Community Information, and my team, some of my team is behind me here. You want to raise your hands? And Aaron. I want to say just before we get to the slides that we've been working really hard to centralize and formalize communication. My team has been working with schools and strategies to improve communication as well as really beefing up our marketing plans. So, our first slide, Goal 5's mission is to strengthen communication and community engagement.
Priority strategies include strengthening partnerships, deepening engagement with the broader community. Strategy B is to communicate openly, effectively with families and the community so they feel welcomed, valued, and informed, and to communicate information quickly, clearly, and accurately to all employees across the district. Our metrics of success are to increase the number of community partners, improve internal stakeholder perception, and external stakeholder perceptions. Here are some highlights. We continue to actively develop new partnerships. This year alone, we have added 4 large partnerships and dozens of smaller partnerships. And the way we distinguish those is, for example, MOAS, Peabody, NASCAR, and Jeremiah's. Those are some of the larger partnerships, and they expand across the district. A cost estimate of $300,000 this year so far. In an effort to instill some best practices when it comes to customer service and be uniform across our district, Dr. Fritz made it a priority that customer service and the red carpet campaign be pushed out and in standardization of quality customer service throughout the district. Right now, we're working on getting a group of secret shoppers to evaluate our customer service in schools and district departments, and those who do well will receive a red carpet for their front offices to display and brag about. We've had a number of successful marketing campaigns, which include the school choice fairs, high school showcase, Let's Talk, websites, social media. We've had a lot of growth. We've increased our number of Facebook followers by 1,000 since July 2021 and 550 Twitter followers. Goal 5A, we'll break it down. Our goal lead for that is Kelly Amy. As part of Goal 5A, we increased the number of actively engaged community partners from 292 to 426, and if you remember, our plan is to get to 450 by the end of this 3-year plan, and we are definitely on track. We've implemented new partnership programs, including those listed below. We have the Peabody Foundation, the Lohman Museum of Arts and Sciences Field Study, where nearly 2,200 students attended to date. Embry-Riddle, where a partnership is underway to bring Neo City concept to Volusia County. NASCAR, the NASCAR Foundation has already donated $25,000 for Tomorrow's Leaders and Take Stock in Children field trips to the Speedway. And some of the events and projects that we've been working on. Principal for a Day, our very first ever shadowing event, was a huge success. We had 155 principals and business partners in attendance. We had a lot of great feedback on that. The business partner roundtable meetings. This is something that Dr. Fritz has been doing, and we've been helping coordinate. 2 of the quarterly roundtable meetings have already occurred, and they have been well attended and enthusiastically received. Ally Financial, Fintropolis. This was a unique event. I don't know how many of you heard about it because we pushed it out on all social media platforms and sent out emails and screamed it from the rooftops. But we have our very own Hinson alumni, Keyshawn Smith, who came to speak to our students about a new Minecraft game that he developed with his colleagues at Ally Financial. And the game has been downloaded more than 2 million times, and he also donated $10,000 to Hinson Middle School. We have the U Science Project with the Daytona Beach Chamber that has performance measures of aptitudes to uncover students' talents and match them to careers. It's been rolled out to 9th through 12th grade students. And in the fall, 6th through 8th grade students in the spring, it'll be 6th through 8th grade students. One of the highlights we had 7 of the top 15 schools in the nation. So very excited about that. And finally, on this slide, Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune statue. We were part of making history with this. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for our students and staff as nearly 2,000 eighth graders visited the statue before it made its way to Washington, D.C. And then we have the Soft Skills Youth Summit, where we partnered with Daytona Regional Chamber of Commerce with 100 of our students, worked with local businesses to strengthen their soft skills. We have had continued engagement with business and community leaders, including local chambers, Team Volusia, Volusia Manufacturers Association, Career Source, Flagler Volusia. Goal 5B, improving customer service is a big part of this, and Goal 5B's strategy is to communicate openly and effectively with families and the community so they feel welcomed, valued, and informed. Now, some of this was mentioned in our first slide, so I'll touch on it briefly, but listed below are a few of the big initiatives that we've been working on to communicate openly, effectively, so families feel welcome, valued, and informed. improving the customer service standards and guidelines. Dr. Fritz once again made this a priority. We also have the red carpet campaign. We trained more than 500 frontline workers and office staff. The marketing campaigns that we've done, school choice fairs, high school showcase, we highlighted events with marketing campaigns, social media, and used surveys to evaluate the success of programs and whether families felt welcomed, valued, and informed. And that's something that we worked hard on. How do you measure this? Well, we just wanted to ask. So we sent out, and we will continue to send out surveys asking that question. Do you feel welcomed, valued, and informed? And please explain. And 85% of those who answered the school choice survey, those who went to school choice fair, said they feel welcome, valued, and informed. And we did get some good feedback from that survey. Let's talk. 85% of all of our emails were answered within 48 hours, which is a standard, and we measure up against other school districts across the state. The website, we redesigned 23 elementary school websites as of December 2021 to make a uniform look and image across our district, so it matches our district website. Social media, as I mentioned, we've increased our number of Facebook and Twitter followers. And then we can move on to goal 5C. 5C is to communicate information quickly, clearly, and accurately to all employees across the district. We launched our very first ever communication survey for employees. 85% agree or strongly agree they can get the information they need from the district through regular communication channels. 66% agreed or strongly agreed if they needed additional information from the district beyond regular communication channels, they're confident they can get it. That's obviously something we're working on improving there. We started our very first employee mentoring program. More than 330 employees are currently mentoring our students. And we created new communication tools to better inform employees. And some of these include the instructional newsletter, The News for You, the VCS Staff Spotlight, which comes out weekly, where we highlight a teacher, an administrator, and a support staff member. Principal's Council, Dr. Fritz, meets with them. There are two elementary principals, a middle school principal, and a high school principal. And then the mass communications flow chart and point of contact. This was a big one that I worked with Chief Newman on to communicate to our schools and our principals. When there is an emergency in the school, who do they call? Do they have the information at their fingertips? And what's the process? Social media hashtags and events. These are fun. We have lots of these. And Katie Hodgins, she's our social media specialist. She is a master of Excel spreadsheets. And she has all sorts of events planned throughout the year, including, for example, hashtag Fridays with Fritz, hashtag Teacher Tuesdays. We created LinkedIn accounts this year for VCS, Dr. Fritz, and Dr. Balgobin, and we will continue to add more. We now have regular employee newsletters, as I mentioned, teacher focus groups, principal focus groups. And finally, some exciting news coming in March. We will be launching the Epley discount program for our employees, all employees. This includes local business discounts as well as retail chains, and they are in the process of securing several apartment complexes as part of this program to offer discounted down payments and rent for all VCS employees. This is something that we're definitely working with recruitment and retention to let them know when they're looking for hiring employees that they're aware of. We'll continue, as I mentioned, to centralize and formalize communications throughout the district. Lots of exciting things going on. I could go on forever, but that's what I have here today. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much. And so we will begin with, which way are we? This way or that way? I think we started. You know what? We'll start with Ms. Burnett.
Thank you. I'm good. I'll email you any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes.
I want to say thank you for everything that you've done and all that you've presented. And I'll just ask one question and I'll email the rest. On the Let's Talk app, when you mentioned, you know, the time frame in which we're returning, the responses and everything, I still have a little bit of a concern on that anonymous part, because when anonymous things are sent in, we have no way of responding to anonymous things. And so what I've tended to see when we have received anonymous, it's not really anyone asking a question or asking for support or assistance. It's kind of what goes on social media. It's like I'm hiding here behind my keyboard and I'm just making a statement, which then is tying up staff's time to read and everything, but yet there's no way to respond. So I would just like to probably have an open discussion about that part of the app again. because I don't really understand the purpose behind it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Persis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kelly, I just think you're doing an awesome job. I think everybody in your department, I just love their energy, and I love how they're just covering everything, everywhere, in every way that we possibly can. You have expanded our reach in social media. You're all over it on the schools and helping them have better websites, and I know the principals love that. Just continue putting out that positive message. You just can't get it out there over and over. You just have to keep doing it. You've got to stay out in front, and I think that's what you are doing. So we can have our accurate message in front of our community. And so these naysayers and negative Nellies and all those people that just want to gripe and moan and complain, let them do it in their own a silo, because the whole truth, the truth of the matter is we are doing a good job here in Volusia County, and we should be pounding our chests about it, and we need to get that message out, because that's what makes our employees feel good, when they know that they are appreciated, and they know that the school board recognizes their value. That's what keeps all of us going, and I think it's people in your department that helps make that work. And so I just want to say, kudos to all of you. I know that sometimes your work is thankless too. But here I am. I'm just thanking you,
thank you.
Because I think you're doing an awesome job. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too want to say thank you for the positiveness that just exudes from the communications office. It wasn't too long ago, it was one person, and Dr. Fritz, when we interviewed him several years ago, we all told him what we heard from our critics, from the unions, from teachers, from parents. We were deficient in communication. It's still being harped on, but I don't hear it near as much, because Kelly, you and your team are doing such an excellent job. Thank you, Dr. Fritz, for expanding this department and hiring such a bubbly, well-qualified person who has experience in not only reporting, but in marketing, and I guess just putting out the good word. So thank you for that. And I also want to add, recently I've had to downsize. It's that time of life. I've had to downsize in my home. And I did purchase a home from D.R. Horton, a new one. And I did get $1,000 off the cost of my home, because I worked for Volusia County Schools. Just thought I'd give them a plug. Wow.
That's definitely
thank
good
you,
to
Mr.
know.
Chairman.
Thank yeah. you.
All right. And so, Kelly, I can thank you enough. I think from the time we sat here 3 years ago to the point where we are today, it is night and day. Not only is it night and day, but we strive to make it better every day. And so for that, thank you to you and your team, because you've got some amazing folks back there who've got your back, and you have theirs, and have put the story of our district out there, and it's been night and day. So thank you so much, and that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Board members, I know we spent some extra time today, and we could have spent the entire time on one goal going through this. So I encourage you. I think we did an okay job capturing your questions, but encourage you to send questions. I'm going to ask that, because our communication is goal five, that all questions go to Kelly and Rachel. If you could put both of them on there so that we could make sure that we get them back to you with the answers, we'd appreciate that. At this time, Mr. Clone, we do have one more presentation, if we could move into that fairly quickly. It's not a long presentation, but we're very excited about this. Dr. B, if you'd just stay up here with the team for a second. We are bringing together to you today a pilot program for a dual language program. You know, we all have those fantasies that if we could just do something and control it, that we would. And one of those things that I wish we could do is have every kindergartner learn a foreign language. I think the benefits are just truly amazing. And I have seen where dual language programs have just made a huge impact and difference. And talk about improving later on performance. When a young child learns a second language, later on their SAT scores go up. Their admissions into colleges, they usually can reach those stretch goals. There's lots of benefits to this. And what the team is going to propose to you today is that we start two programs, one on the east, one on the west, and kind of talk about what that would look like as we go through this process. So, Dr. B.
Thank you, Dr. Fritz. This is a topic, actually, that's very dear to my heart because back in the days, I was a magnet dual language principal at one of my favorite schools in my career. So having the opportunity to work with the team here, and this is just the beginning for Volusia County. Obviously, we're going to start with two schools, one in the east and the west. I'd like to thank the team who's super excited, and they have a group of individuals from their department that are here. You guys, can you raise your hands, please? Because they are very excited as well. So I will pass this on to Ms. Gianna Acevedo, who will introduce Ms. Sylvia. And we're going to present to you a little bit of a background understanding in terms of our dual language program, magnet dual language program that we will have in Volusia County, a little bit in terms of the timeline, share some research with you, and then we'll be very, very happy to answer any and all questions that you may have.
Gianna? Thank you, Dr. Baldwin. Good afternoon, Chairman Colon, school board members, Superintendent Fritz. I am Gianna Acevedo Alamo, coordinator of the English for Speakers of Other Languages program. Here with me, I have Sylvia Garcia Wolf, elementary ESOL specialist, and of course, the team in the back. We have VPK. We have Dr. Grace Keller-Meyer from the World Languages component, and of course, the ESOL team members who I want to thank from the bottom of my heart for their support and encouragement. We are absolutely excited to be here today and share information regarding the dual language immersion program coming to Holly Hill and Spirit Elementary. Sylvia has a wonderful presentation that will detail this project, so I'm going to turn it over to Sylvia.
Good afternoon, Chairman Colon, school board members, Dr. Fritz. I echo Ms. Acevedo's statement. We are thrilled to share this phenomenal educational opportunity for our students. In preparation for this presentation, we had the opportunity to meet with district PTA and to sit with a focus group of parents and listen to their questions, which we will answer throughout this presentation. We'd like to thank those parents and the PTA president who will be supporting our parent orientations as we move forward. The dual language immersion instructional model is directly linked and aligned to our district's strategic plan. It supports goals 1, 3, and 5. So what is the dual language immersion program? It is a program that offers both English-speaking and Spanish-speaking students a unique, enriching, and challenging curriculum. English and Spanish speakers will learn not only to speak in the other language, but they will also learn to read and write it. And as data will demonstrate, they will become bilingual and biliterate while achieving high levels of academic success. Together, students will learn each other's languages and cultures. This will give them the skills needed to succeed in our ever-growing multicultural society and global economy. Students in this program will participate in all state and district requirements in English, but they will be progress monitored for reading in both language, as is customary. The dual language immersion model is conducive to students acquiring the target language, not just learning it. Acquiring a language means internalizing it, not just applying language and grammar rules. The best example I can give you is my husband, a monolingual English speaker. When I met him, the only thing he could say to me was, "Mi lápiz es rojo," and "¿Dónde está la biblioteca?" He learned enough Spanish in high school and college to pass and get good grades in his Spanish classes. But after that, he lost it. According to Stephen Krashen, best known for his research and work in establishing the theory of second language acquisition, it takes 3 to 5 years to build proficiency with adequate exposure for young students. The dual language immersion program offers benefits to our students in several areas, the first of which are the academic benefits. According to John Rosales and other researchers, it has been shown that the dual language immersion program closes the achievement gap for historically struggling subgroups, not only ELLs. Students in the program have a higher GPA and better attendance. And they also perform better on standardized assessments. According to Hinden's brain research, there are also cognitive benefits. This instructional model helps students develop thinking skills. It increases their understanding of math concepts, their reading comprehension, their ability to use logic, and it also enhances their abilities to focus and make decisions. The dual language immersion model also provides several social and emotional benefits, the most significant of those being improved attendance and a decrease in discipline rates. Now, beyond the benefits that we've already discussed, there are economic benefits for both our students and the community. 1 in 3 foreign language dependent employers report a language skill gap in their employees, and 1 in 4 employers report losing business due to a lack of employees with foreign language skills. As you can see, the foreign language most in demand by employers is Spanish. 9 out of 10 employers rely on employees who speak a language other than English. 56% say the demand for employees who speak a language other than English will increase in the next 5 years. And the departments with the greatest need for employees who speak a second language are customer service, sales, marketing, management, and IT. Giving our students the ability to speak, read, and write an additional language not only gives them an advantage in the job market, but it also provides a service to our community. Now let's look at some national data. Professors Wayne Thomas and Virginia Collier are internationally known for their research on long-term school effectiveness for linguistically and culturally diverse students. Their longitudinal research dates back over 32 years and was conducted in 36 school districts across 16 U.S. states. They analyzed more than 7.5 million records in grades K-12. Their research demonstrated that high-quality, long-term, bilingual programs close the achievement gap after 5 years of schooling through the students' first and second languages. The data showed that the two-way dual language immersion program outperformed all of the other models when it comes to long-term student achievement. We recently had the opportunity to visit some dual language schools with similar demographic to our sites in 3 Florida districts. These are high-performing schools, and Coral Way K-8 has been a dual language school for 59 years. One of the things that we were most impressed about with all of the schools that we visited was their data. We'll begin looking at Broward County's. District-wide, dual language students outperformed the non-dual language students by 18.7% on their 2020 iReady diagnostic assessment for reading. At Gulfstream Academy of Hallandale, third grade dual language students outperformed the non-dual language students on the 2019 FSA English Language Assessments by 45 percentage points. the fourth graders by 61.7 percentage points, fifth graders by 65.4 percentage points. And overall, dual language students outperformed their non-dual language counterparts by 56.8 percentage points, which is quite significant. Gulfstream had an 82.2% of dual language students proficient on the 2021 FSA English Language Assessment, and Seacastle had 94.4% proficient, which again is quite remarkable. We'll look now at Orange County. In this chart, the dual language numbers are highlighted in green. As we look at Orange County's Weatherby Elementary, once again, we see that dual language students outperformed both overall school and district data across grades K-2 and across beginning, middle, and end of the year on their iReady reading assessments. As you can see, the dual language scores, once again, are significantly higher. The third grade data at Weatherby Elementary continues the same trend, with dual language students scoring 94% on iReady reading and 91% on the FSA English Language Assessment. Dual language students outperformed the school scores by 22% and the district scores by 36%. As we look at Miami-Dade County, in Miami-Dade, dual language is not a track at a school like it is in Broward and Orange counties. There, the entire school follows the dual language model. At Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, 67.6% of their students scored a 3 or higher on the English Language Assessment, which is 11.83 percentage points above the district and 14.8 percentage points higher than the state. The learning gains for the lowest quartile students also showed an upward data trend and still maintained significant gains, especially when compared to the state, and a minimal drop compared to where they were previous to COVID. 63.9% of Coral Way students scored 3 or above on the 2021 FSA English Language Assessment, which is 8.2 percentage points higher than the district and 11.1 percentage points higher than the state. The same is true for their lowest quartile learning gains, with dual language outperforming the state, and they were also trending up previous to COVID. We've covered some of the impressive data. Now we'd like to share some of the other takeaways from our visits. In order for the dual language immersion model to be effective, one language cannot be favored over the other. We must ensure that teachers teaching the target language are truly proficient in that language. They must not only speak the language, but they must read and write it proficiently, in addition to being fully certified. This program requires a long-term commitment on the part of the parents and the schools. As we saw previously, acquiring a target language takes anywhere between 3 to 5 years. This is why parents are asked to sign a contract making that pre-K-5 or K-5 commitment. Other takeaways were that students should use the same curriculum standards in both languages, and that scheduling for the dual language immersion model must be both strategic and include the four modalities of listening, speaking, reading, and writing when teaching English as a second language and Spanish as a second language. An additional important takeaway is that fluency and literacy practice occur for both languages in order for that target language to be internalized or acquired and not just learned. It is also important that schools cultivate an understanding and appreciation of other cultures to inspire self-esteem, strengthen positive attitudes among the students, their families, and also within the community. When selecting sites for the program, several factors were considered. We looked at the number of Spanish speakers to ensure that the program could meet the 50% Spanish, 50% English speakers necessary for program implementation. We also looked at schools on both the east and west side of the district for equity purposes and took into consideration the principal's interest and commitment to the dual language immersion program, which is essential for its success. Now, we'd like to share the timeline. As you will notice, many of the activities are recurring month after month, so I will not repeat them in the interest of time. In August, we gathered local data for site identification, and we met with the selected principals. In September, we began our ongoing collaboration with the pre-K coordinator. In October, we began ongoing collaboration with the school choice department and began our participation in the VPK curriculum review. In November, we presented to the district PTA. We participated in choice and fact fairs, and we began ongoing collaboration with the instructional materials department for the selection and purchase of the dual language kindergarten textbooks. We also began an ongoing collaboration with Stetson University on their Project 5 dual language grant. In December, we began participating in the Connecting All Language Resources for Excellence, which is a multi-district cadre. In January, we shared our research and professional literature, program structure, and information from our visits with our site principals. We created a school-based dual language leadership team, again in collaboration with our site principals. We began collaborating with REA on our magnet designation. We created a Canvas resource page, and we consulted with the elementary science department. In February, we have shared the dual language overview with the ELA math and science departments. We will share samples of schedules, handbook, curriculum materials with the principals, and we are in the process of developing a marketing plan and setting the dates for community meetings with the principals. We will also participate in the fact fair at Heritage Middle School. In March, we will train the front office personnel on the enrollment procedures. And we will collaborate with HR on staffing. We will continue to hold community information and recruitment meetings, be involved with VPK registration and kindergarten roundup. In April, we will continue supporting the schools, collaborating with departments and organizations, and holding those important community informational and recruitment meetings. In May, we will collaboratively identify the dual language teachers together with our site principals and HR. And in July, we will hold our principals leadership workshop and our dual language teacher opening of school academy. In August, we will hold the dual language parent academy. But most importantly of all, we will implement this amazing educational opportunity for our students at Holly Hill School and Spirit Elementary. We'd like to thank you for allowing us to share this remarkable instructional program with you. And we'd like to leave you with this thought. To learn a new language is to open another window from which to see the world.
Thank you guys very much.
It's wonderful. Thank you so much for that lively presentation.
We're thrilled.
We have questions. So we will start with Mr. Persis.
Hey, Mr. Chair.
Si, senor, dígame.
You're the only one that can speak two languages, right, on the board?
No te oigo, dime.
Yes.
Si. Sí. I don't know what I disagreed to, but...
Hey, I am just so excited about this. I mean, this is just fantastic. I can remember being in school when we first came to Florida. I think it was in the early 50s, and I was in a Dade County school in third grade, and all of a sudden the bell rang, and Spanish was spoken over the intercom, and the person speaking over the intercom would say something, and everybody in the class said something, you know, answered it in Spanish. And this was going like back and forth, and there was like a half hour of this every day. And I was like, where am I? I just could not believe it. I felt like I was so dumb. And anyway, I'm thinking that was way back in the 50s. And I just think it's so, so important for us to offer this opportunity to our children. And as we all know, the earlier you get exposed to another language, the easier it is for you to learn it and to just to immerse yourself in it. That's the way to do it. So yes, I am all on board, and I'm happy to see Holly Hill School was one of the schools. So that's awesome too. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Gracias, señor Persis, señora Cuthbert.
Muchas gracias, señor Chairman. I don't know the Spanish word for chairman. However, when I moved to Florida in the 80s, I thought every school had a pool and every building was air conditioned, and I was sorely wrong. However, of course, I also thought because Florida was so close to so many rich Spanish-speaking cultures, everyone would be speaking a second language. So I'm grateful for this program. Love to see how this pilot would begin. I think it's something we should have done a long time ago. So thank you very much.
Gracias, Señora Burnett.
I'm going to give up on the speaking Spanish because the words I know probably aren't appropriate. But anyway, it was a great presentation. Thank you. And I hope to learn from you guys.
Thank you so
Thanks.
Much.
Señorita Haynes.
Okay, so I have a couple quick questions. So how are students going to be selected to get into the program? Because that is something that a parent had reached out and asked me. You know, can a parent just walk right into the front office to enroll next year at Spirit for Kindergarten and say, I want this program, or is there any criteria?
We are really going to go based on the number of people that first come in. It's, you know, first come, first serve. But we're looking for a 50-50 with the language allocation. So we really need 50% of the students to be Spanish speakers and 50% to be native English speakers. Outside of that, there's really no additional requirement other than the long-term commitment.
Okay. So when a parent, you know, walks into Spirit Elementary next year, if I understand correctly, you're looking for an equal balance between English speakers and Spanish speakers, but as long as the parent can agree to a kindergarten through fifth grade commitment, knowing that once they start this, they're going to stay in that, there's no other criteria.
That is correct.
All right. And then based upon that kindergarten group of students, and I think I already know the answer to this, but this is what was asked. We're going to teach the kindergarten academic standards the way they're presented and approved by the state for the group, and there will be no difference in our expectations for all of the students participating.
Absolutely correct. We have to honor the state standards, and we'll stick to that regardless of the language in which the content is being presented.
Okay. Those were my two questions. Thank you, and looking forward to this. I will just say I'm a little disappointed because it was supposed to be coming my way, and it's now gone towards District 5, but it's a great program, and I support it. Thank
Gracias,
you.
Señorita Haynes. And so, you know,
I grew up and learned French, okay, because I lived in Michigan.
When we parle beau français, the next program, you'll take it away. I want to thank you guys, and just like you, Ms. Haynes, I asked the same questions. I said, how the heck are we going to focus on English and ELA, and how are we not going to confuse kids in Spanish? And it was interesting to sit with these ladies over at DeLand Middle. Shout out to DeLand Middle for housing them over there. It was quite the walk, like way back there. And I asked a lot of those questions as well, and believe it or not, they pulled out, they were ready for me. So they had the data to show that these students actually exceed the expectation and surpass their counterparts, and it may have to do with, you know, brain cells and lots of brain passages and all that good stuff that makes them excel at it. So I am very comfortable and pleased, and I am looking forward to having that at Spirit Elementary. And then next we'll go to Enterprise, then we'll go to Discovery. And yes, sí, señorita. And so, again, thank you. And for your husband and his Adonde está el baño, that's probably 6 years worth of Spanish.
Since he married me, he has become very fluent in Cuban food, Mr.
Oh, interesting. Okay, very good. And last but not least, I know we do have one more order of business. Mr. Doran wanted to ask us a quick question.
Yes, thank you very much. I need for the board to collectively pull out their calendars, and we need to pick a date for the AFSCME impasse hearing to occur. And Kathy Knowles was kind enough to come to this, if you want to come up, Ms. Knowles, to this workshop to be present as well, so that everybody will be on the same page when it comes to the date and time and location. I'm anticipating the location would be here. I think it would be, would that provide enough capacity for whoever shows up? What time we're going to do this, we want to make sure that the employees can be here. So do we have a time that we know? Dr. Fritz, how does that work? I don't know what time they get off work.
We should say 4:30, Kathy, would be fine.
Well, you get some bus drivers that don't actually get off to about 6. It's on the committee.
Okay.
So we could do, if you do, I don't know how long we're actually scheduled for. So if we did in-between routes, so probably like from 10 to 12, if that's enough time. I don't know how long it normally lasts.
10 to 12. Are you talking about 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Well,
what about,
I mean, there are other people.
What about Schoolway Cafe at that time?
We'll be okay.
Whatever the board wishes on that, I just want to make sure that there's no criticism later that we're holding it at a point in time when people had to work and then they had to.
Because, maintenance, you know, whatever their schedule is, 6 to, you know, because that's a maintenance man, a different. And mechanics, you know, I think some of them come in really early and get off early. So the bus drivers are the ones that have the split route so that we could just do it, you know, if they want to attend.
Ms. Haynes?
Okay, so Kathy, I hear what you're saying, but I'm wondering, would it be, if the latest bus driver goes to 6 p.m.
Yeah, because she does a middle school route.
Right, and I understand that because of when middle school gets out. How many hours are we looking at? Because possibly this is something we need to not start till 7 p.m.
Yeah,
in the evening.
I can respond to that.
Cover for
right. I have asked both sides how much time they want to present. I think the general consensus is that it would take around 30 minutes per side. However, Ms. Knowles indicated that she does not want to be in a position. I told her whatever the time is, that's it. You're going to get cut off. So she didn't want to be in that position, so she suggested 45 minutes per side. Again, I don't think it will take that long, but, you know, that's what is being discussed. And also, then you're going to have questions that the board members might want to ask in discussion, and I think we only have one issue, so I think it will go fairly quickly after that, but just factor that in.
Ms. Haynes?
I want to hear exactly whatever everybody wants. I think 30 minutes is really not enough.
Okay.
I mean, could we actually give them each an hour? And if they take less than an hour, then it's just to our benefit. So my question would be, say we started at 7 p.m. and we gave each of them an hour, then we're at 9 p.m. And then do we have to allow public input?
No.
Okay, so then if we gave ourselves, I mean, I'm just saying that they took a full hour and we gave ourselves an hour, you know, to deliberate, but I don't know that we would need that. I mean, we're looking at a 7 to 10 p.m., 7 to 11 p.m. or 7 to 10 p.m. or something.
Whatever is the pleasure of the board. Understanding that we're talking about the presentation time, no questions will be asked. So that's just strictly they present, then the other side presents, then that side can respond, and that side can respond. But it all adds up to whatever number we put on it. So if that's 1 hour or less, then that works. And then you all start asking questions.
All right.
My thought is, if we've gone to this point, I want to hear what they have to say, because they've been waiting. And I don't want to rush it, and then people feel that they, you know, it wasn't heard, and at the same time, because there's a rebuttal piece. So I personally would like to give basically an hour to each side for the presentation plus the rebuttal, and so that's a two-hour period of time, and then, you know, whatever time period it takes for us. But that's just my opinion. I don't know about doing it in the middle of the day because of where all these employees work.
Thank you. Ms. Burnett?
I will agree with Jamie. And I wanted to ask, what is our time frame here? Like, when do we need, date-wise? Like,
well,
are we
looking
3 weeks?
I was looking at March 15th, you know, about a month to 5 weeks out.
Is that spring break?
Oh, is it? Okay, well, that's why I've got everybody together. all right, then, I mean, it's not like we have to go that far unless somebody wants to. Let's see, how about March 10th?
What about March 1st? I mean, if we're pushing, I didn't even know we were going to push it out that far.
Okay.
But what if we did March 1st? It's not a board meeting night. It is a Tuesday night, which people are used to.
I'll be out of the country.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry.
I don't want to push it, because the further we push this out, the longer it's going to take before anyone gets paid.
How about the 7th? Monday the 7th? No. Not Monday the 7th.
Okay.
The 8th, we have a school board meeting, so that doesn't
work. Can we do it sooner? Can we go into February? What about February 23rd?
If everybody's okay with it, then, yeah, we can go.
I can't do the 23rd.
Okay, can you do the...
Yeah, I can't do the 23rd either.
Okay, can you do the 21st?
What'd you say, 21st?
Yes.
We have the Teacher of the Year, 21st, I can.
You have a proclamation.
It's a holiday.
So we work that day?
We work that day. We don't have that day off.
Is everybody else good on the 21st? I do have a commitment at the City of Deltona. However, if that date works, then that's enough time for everyone, because that's the other part of it. You guys have council as well.
I'll be
correct?
Ready.
You'll be ready?
Because the order that you'll be signing is going to have a couple of dates that they have to meet deadlines in order to get information to the board in advance of the hearing, so you have an opportunity to read it, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we can, if everybody's agreeable, we can make that happen.
Okay, let's hear what Mr. Persis.
What about the 24th?
I won't be in town that day.
Yeah, I'm kind of not around on the 21st.
Okay. So we
How about the 28th? Monday the 28th.
Monday the 28th. Anybody have any
objections?
Are
you still out of town? So, Ted,
yeah,
all the dates we're coming up with, you're out of town.
I mean, somebody else from my firm can come, but they will have zero experience with this.
Okay.
Are you out of town, Ted, on the 28th?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
So when do you come back in from town?
I come back I arrive back on the 4th. So that's a Friday.
Can we do the 7th?
Looking at the 7th.
Yeah, I can do the 7th.
I can't. I don't know how... my role is but I can't be here on the 7th.
That would be your call. I mean, the district will have its presenters. I doubt that would be you, but obviously it's important if you want to be here.
Yeah, my son's getting married. It's important I be there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you better be there.
You better believe it.
The 9th?
Yes, I can do the 9th.
Wednesday the
9th?
The 9th
works for me.
I can do the 9th.
Ms. Cuthbert?
The 9th is fine for me. Now, I also think, Mr. Chairman, since you've called on me, when I've seen buses in my neighborhood, which I think is at the end of a route, I've seen them as late as 5:20. I think we could go as early as maybe 6:15 or 6:30 in order for them to get back to their buses and then come over. Now, I didn't. Someone asked the question about public participation, but I didn't hear an answer. Is there public participation?
No.
Yeah, the answer is there is no public participation.
Okay, so we could start as early as 6:15. Ms. Knowles, is that too early? So we have a little more time? Because I want to be cognizant of their getting up the next morning to start their early routes.
Because, like I said, with Carol, I know she's the new Simona side, so I know she doesn't get up her route to 5:45, 6 o'clock is usually then for her to get here.
Okay, is 6:30? I'm just trying to make it not less
so late,
11:12, so they can work it up the next morning.
Yeah, I think we should be able to do 6:30.
Okay. 6:30 to start on March 9th, then?
Okay.
Do we have a consensus? Everybody A? Anybody an A on that one?
I'm good.
Is the district good?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
We'll be good.
Yes, Mr. Cook. Yes, Mr. Persis.
Hey, Mr. Doran?
Yes, sir.
Are you there? Hi there. I've been through a few of these, and I've seen these presentations be 20 minutes each side. After 20 minutes, if you can't state the facts in 20 minutes, then something's wrong. I mean, it's just the way it is. And giving them more time just to repeat what they've already said, I think is a waste of everyone's time. So, I mean, I don't get it. I mean, I'll let you weigh in on it, but I don't know. I haven't seen one where any side's been given an hour.
Well, my response to that would be we have had these where there are a number of rather complex issues. For instance, when we went through the healthcare issues, that took some time. This does not appear to me to be an issue that's going to take a tremendous amount of time to present. As I said, both sides' first response was 30 minutes would be enough, and then I explained to her it's going to be what it is, and then I'm referring to Ms. Knowles, she said, can we make it 45? I said, well, it's whatever the board wants, absolutely. We can do whatever you guys collectively decide. So, and it doesn't mean you have to take all the time, right? So that would be my response to you, Mr. Persis.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to throw it out there. You give them an hour, and they'll feel like they have to fill an hour. 45 minutes, I guess. But I was fine with the 30 minutes.
Ms. Knowles, how long do you need?
Like I say, like I said, this is our first time doing it because, I've been here, 15 years is the first impasse that we've ever had. So never had to sit through one. So, and it's just one issue that we're bringing forward. So, I like to sit with the 45 just because of the unknown, just first time going through it.
Mr. Pendley, district okay with that? 45 minutes suffice?
Representing this matter by Tompkins communicated the board's date and start time to him. I'm waiting to hear back. Okay. But 45 minutes, I think, is that.
Awesome. So it sounds like we have a date and a time pending Mr. Gonzalez's ability to meet that. Otherwise, Mr. Doran will reach out, and we may have to pick another date. But pending that date being okay, we have a date for March 9th. And I do want to say I appreciate your willingness to do it during the day, but I think it's important that even if they can't speak, they can wave in support. And I look forward to seeing all the yellow shirts with the precious cargo sitting in the audience. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Haynes?
In the event that March 9th does not work, I'd still like to go back and recommend that we look at February 28th. And I know that, Mr. Doran, you're going to be out of town. I just really, this has been drug out far enough. And even if this is, you know, this will be settled at the night of March 9th, but it's still going to then take how much longer before payroll processes it. And so we're looking at, it'll be well after spring break before these individuals who've been working on all year will receive any compensation for what the time that they've put in. I don't want to push it out any further. If we have to make a choice between having Mr. Doran here or not, I'd like to go sooner than later. So if the 9th doesn't work, I'd like to recommend we back up to February 28th if that works.
Sounds good. That's a backup plan. And we'll know shortly from Mr. Pendley as well.
As soon as I find out, I'll be happy to communicate with
Mr. And the 28th is good with me.
Thank you. Ms. Cuthbert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that 45 minutes? Does that include rebuttal?
Yes.
Okay, so total. So they can go, Ms. Knoll's side could even go 20 minutes and reserve time left for rebuttal, correct?
Yes, whatever time you don't use the first round, you have mm-hmm. available to you to use in the second round, both sides, and in a rebuttal type format.
Okay. Okay, and also, sir, if we do have to go to our second choice, the alternate choice on the 28th, and you're out of town, what does that leave us for your guidance?
Well, I mean, I could possibly do it virtually. So I guess we'll just cross that bridge when we come to it.
Okay,
I don't know
sir,
what else to say about it.
All right, thank you, sir.
Very good. Does anybody else have any other thoughts, feelings, or concerns before we end this meeting?
Yes, sir.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.